over it?
No, all of you, I think.
Rowan said.
Is it a trap?
Probably in some way or another, Lysandra said. He wants you to deliver it and then join him for dinner.
Demons and dining, Aelin said. A delightful combination. Only Lysandra smiled.
Will he poison us?
Adian asked. Aelin scratched at a piece of dirt on the table. Poison is an Aerobin style. If he were to do anything to the food, it would be to add some drug that would incapacitate us while he had us moved wherever he wanted. It's the control that he loves, she added, still staring at the table, not quite feeling like seeing what was written on Rowan or Adian's face. The pain and fear, yes, but the power is what he really thrives on. Lysandra's face had lost its softness, her eyes cold and sharp, a reflection of Aelin's own, no doubt. The only person who could understand, who had also learned firsthand exactly how far that lust for control went. Aelin rose from her seat. I'll walk you to your carriage. She and Lysandra paused among the stacks of crates in the warehouse.
Are you ready?
Lysandra asked, crossing her arms. Aelin nodded. I'm not sure the debt could ever be paid for what they all did, but it will have to be enough. I'm running out of time. Lysandra pursed her lips.
I won't be able to risk coming here again until afterward.
Thank you for everything.
He could still have a few tricks up his sleeve. Be on your guard.
And you be on yours.
You're not mad that I didn't tell you.
Your secret could get you killed just as easily as mine, Lysandra. I just felt, I don't know. If anything, I wondered if I'd done something wrong. Something to make you not trust me enough to tell me.
I've wanted to. I've been dying to.
Aelin believed her. You risked those Volg guards for me. For Adian, that day we rescued him, Aelin said. They'd probably be beside themselves if they learned there was a shifter in this city. And that night at the pits, when she'd kept turning away from the Volg and hiding behind Aerobin, it had been to avoid their notice.
You have to be insane. Even before I knew who you were, Aelin, I knew that what you were working toward, it was worth it.
What is? Her throat tightened.
A world where people like me don't have to hide.
Lysandra turned away. But Aelin grabbed her by the hand. Lysandra smiled a bit.
Times like these, I wish I had your particular skill set instead.
Would you do it if you could? About 2 nights from now, I mean. Lysandra gently let go of her hand.
I've thought about it every single day since Wesley died. I would do it, and gladly. But I don't mind if you do it. You won't hesitate. I find that comforting somehow.
The invitation arrived by street urchin at 10 o'clock the next morning. Aelin stared at the cream-colored envelope on the table before the fireplace. Its red wax seal imprinted with crossed daggers. Adian and Rowan, peering over her shoulders, studied the box it had come with. Both males sniffed and frowned.
It smells like almonds, Adian said.
She pulled out the card, a formal invitation for dinner tomorrow at 8, for her and 2 guests, and a request for the favor owed to him. His patience was at an end, but in typical Aerobin fashion, dumping the demon at his doorstep wouldn't be enough. No, she'd deliver it on his terms. The dinner was late enough in the day to give her time to stew. There was a note at the end of the invitation, in an elegant yet efficient scrawl.
A gift, and one I hope you'll wear tomorrow night.
She chucked the card onto the table and waved a hand to Adian or Rowan to open the box. As she walked to the window and looked out toward the castle, it was blindingly bright in the morning sun, glimmering as though it had been crafted from pearl and gold and silver. The slither of ribbon, the thought of the box lid opening, and,
what the hell is that?
She glanced over her shoulder. Adian held a large glass bottle in his hands, full of amber liquid. She said flatly,
perfumed skin oil.
Why does he want you to wear it?
Adian asked too quietly. She looked out the window again. Rowan stalked over and perched on the armchair behind her, a steady force at her back. Aelin said, "It's just another move in the game we've been playing." She'd have to rub it into her skin, his scent. She told herself that she'd expected nothing less, but...
"And you're going to use it?"
Adian spat. "Tomorrow, our one goal is to get the amulet of Orinth from him. Agreeing to wear that oil will put him on unsure footing."
"I don't follow."
"The invitation is a threat,"
Rowan replied for her. She could feel him inches away, was aware of his movements as much as her own.
"Two companions. He knows how many of us are here, knows who you are."
"And you?"
Adian asked. The fabric of his shirt sighed against Rowan's skin as he shrugged.
"He's probably figured out by now that I'm Fae."
The thought of Rowan facing Aerobin, and what Aerobin might try to do.
"And what about the demon?"
Adian demanded.
"He expects us to bring it over in all our finery?"
"Another test, and yes."
"So, when do we go catch ourselves a Vog, Commander?"
Aelin and Rowan glanced at each other. "You're staying here," she said to Adian.
"Like hell I am."
She pointed to his side. "If you hadn't been a hot-headed pain in my ass and torn your stitches when you sparred with Rowan, you could have come. But you're still on the mend, and I'm not going to risk exposing your wounds to the filth in the sewers just so you can feel better about yourself."
Adian's nostrils flared as he reined in his temper. "You're going to face a demon."
"She'll be taken care of,"
Rowan said. "I can take care of myself," she snapped. "I'm going to get dressed." She grabbed her suit from where she'd left it drying over an armchair before the open windows.
Ian sighed behind her.
"Please, just be safe."
"And Lysandra is to be trusted?"
"We'll find out tomorrow," she said. She trusted Lysandra. She wouldn't have let her near Adian otherwise. But Lysandra wouldn't necessarily know if Aerobin was using her.
Rowan lifted his brows.
"Are you all right?"
She nodded. "I just want to get through these 2 days and be done with it."
"That will never stop being strange," Adian muttered.
"Deal with it," she told him, carrying the suit into the bedroom. "Let's go hunt ourselves a pretty little demon." Chapter 39. "Dead as dead can be," Aelin said, towing the upper half of the Wordhound's remains. Rowan, crouching over one of the bottom bits, growled his confirmation. "Lorcan doesn't pull punches, does he?" she said, studying the reeking, blood-splattered sewer crossroads. There was hardly anything left of the Vog captains, or the Wordhound. In a matter of moments, Lorcan had massacred them all as if they were chattel.
Gods above.
"Lorcan probably spent the entire fight imagining each of these creatures was you,"
Rowan said, rising from his crouch, bearing a clawed arm.
"The stone skin seems like armor, but inside it's just flesh."
He sniffed at it and snarled in disgust. "Good. And thank you, Lorcan, for finding that out for us."
She strode to Rowan, taking the heavy arm from him, and waved at the prince with the creature's stiff fingers.
"Stop that,"
he hissed.
She wriggled the demon's fingers a bit more.
"It'd make a good back scratcher."
Rowan only frowned. "Killjoy," she said, and chucked the arm onto the torso of the Wordhound. It landed with a heavy thump and click of stone.
"So, Lorcan can bring down a Wordhound," Rowan snorted at the name she'd coined. "And once it's down, it seems like it stays down. Good to know."
Rowan eyed her warily.
"This trap wasn't just to send Lorcan a message, was it?"
"These things are the king's puppets," she said. "So his grand imperial majesty now has a read on Lorcan's face and smell. And I suspect he will not be very pleased to have a Fae warrior in his city. Why, I'd bet that Lorcan is currently being pursued by the 7 other Wordhounds, who no doubt have a score to settle on behalf of their king and their fallen brother."
Rowan shook his head.
"I don't know whether to throttle you or clap you on the back."
"I think there's a long line of people who feel the same way. She scanned the sewer-turned-charnel house. I needed Lorkin's eyes elsewhere tonight and tomorrow, and I needed to know whether these wordhounds could be killed.
Why?
He saw too much. Slowly, she met his gaze. Because I'm going to use their beloved sewer entrance to get into the castle and blow up the clock tower right from under them. Rowan let out a low, wicked chuckle.
That's how you're going to free magic.
Once Lorkin kills the last of the wordhounds, you're going in.
He really should have killed me, considering the world of trouble that's now hunting him through this city.
Rowan bared his teeth in a feral smile.
He had it coming.
Cloaked, armed, and masked, Aelin leaned against the stone wall of the abandoned building, while Rowan circled the bound Vogue commander in the center of the room.
You've signed your death warrant, you maggots,
the thing inside the guard's body said. Aelin clicked her tongue. You must not be a very good demon to be captured so easily. It had been a joke, really. Aelin had picked the smallest patrol led by the mildest of the commanders. She and Rowan had ambushed the patrol just before midnight, in a quiet part of the city. She'd barely killed two guards before the rest were dead at Rowan's hand. And when the commander tried to run, the Fey warrior had caught him within heartbeats. Rendering him unconscious had been the work of a moment. The hardest part had been dragging his carcass across the slums, into the building and down into the cellar, where they'd chained him to a chair.
I'm not a demon,
the man hissed, as if every word burned him. Aelin crossed her arms. Rowan, bearing both Goldrin and Damaris, circled the man, a hawk closing in on prey. Then what's the ring for? She said. A gasp of breath, human, labored.
To enslave us, corrupt us.
And?
Come closer, and I might tell you.
His voice changed then, deeper and colder.
What's your name?
Rowan asked.
Your human tongues cannot pronounce our names, or our language,
the demon said. She mimicked, Your human tongues cannot pronounce our names. I've heard that one before, unfortunately. Aelin let out a low laugh as the creature inside the man seethed. What is your name? Your real name. The man thrashed, a violent jerking motion that made Rowan step closer. She carefully monitored the battle between the two beings inside that body. At last, it said,
Stevan!
Stevan, she said. The man's eyes were clear, fixed on her. Stevan, she said again, louder.
Quiet,
the demon snapped. Where are you from, Stevan?
Enough of-
Melisande!
Stevan, she repeated. It hadn't worked on the day of Adian's escape. It hadn't been enough then, but now. Do you have a family, Stevan?
Dead. All of them.
Just as you will be.
He stiffened, slumped, stiffened, slumped. Can you take off the ring?
Never,
the thing said. Can you come back, Stevan, if the ring is gone? A shudder that left his head hanging between his shoulders.
I don't want to, even if I could.
Why?
The things I did, we did.
He liked to watch while I took them, while I ripped them apart.
Rowan stopped his circling, standing beside her. Despite his mask, she could almost see the look on his face, the disgust and pity. Tell me about the Vogue princes, Aelin said.
Both man and demon were silent.
Tell me about the Vogue princes, she ordered.
They are darkness. They are glory. They are eternal.
Stevan, tell me. Is there one here, in Rifthold?
Yes.
Whose body is it inhabiting?
The Crown Prince's.
Is the prince in there, as you are in there?
I never saw him, never spoke to him. If it's a prince inside him, I can't hold out, can't stand this thing. If it's a prince...
The prince will have broken him, used and taken him.
Dorian. Dorian.
The man breathed.
Please,
his voice so empty and soft compared to that of the thing inside him.
Please, just end it. I can't hold it.
Liar, she purred. You gave yourself to it.
No choice,
the man gasped out.
They came to our homes, our families. They said the rings were part of the uniform, so we had to wear them.
A shudder went through him, and something ancient and cold smiled at her.
What are you, woman?
It licked its lips.
Let me taste you. Tell me what you are.
Aelin studied the black ring on its finger. Cain. Once upon a time, months and lifetimes ago, Cain had fought the thing inside him. There had been a day, in the halls of the castle, when he'd looked hounded, hunted, as if despite the ring. I am death, she said simply, should you want it. The man sagged, the demon vanishing.
Yes,
he sighed.
Yes.
What would you offer me in exchange?
Anything,
the man breathed.
Please.
She looked at his hand, at his ring, and reached into her pocket. Then listen carefully. Aelin awoke, drenched in sweat and twisted in the sheets, fear clenching her like a fist. She willed herself to breathe, to blink, to look at the moon-bathed room, to turn her head and see the Fey Prince slumbering across the bed. Alive, not tortured, not dead. Still, she reached a hand out over the sea of blankets between them and touched his bare shoulder. Rock-hard muscle encased in velvet-soft skin. Real. They'd done what they needed to, and the Vol commander was locked in another building, ready and waiting for tomorrow night, when they would bring him to the keep, Aerobin's favor at last fulfilled. But the words of the demon rang through her head, and then they blended with the voice of the Volg prince that had used Dorian's mouth like a puppet.
I will destroy everything that you love.
A promise. Aelin loosed a breath, careful not to disturb the Fey prince sleeping beside her. For a moment, it was hard to pull back the hand touching his arm. For a moment, she was tempted to stroke her fingers down the curve of muscle. But she had one last thing to do tonight. So she withdrew her hand. And this time, he didn't wake when she crept out of the room. It was almost 4 in the morning when she slipped back into the bedroom, her boots clutched in one hand. She made it all of 2 steps, 2 immensely heavy, exhausted steps, before Rowan said from the bed,
You smell like ash.
She just kept going until she dropped her boots off in the closet, stripped down into the first shirt she could find, and washed her face and neck.
I had things to do,
she said as she climbed into bed.
You were stealthier this time.
The rage simmering off him was almost hot enough to burn through the blankets. This wasn't particularly high risk.
Lie. Lie, lie, lie.
She'd just been lucky.
And I suppose you're not going to tell me until you want to?
She slumped against the pillows. Don't get pissy because I out-stealthed you. His snarl reverberated across the mattress.
It's not a joke.
She closed her eyes, her limbs leaden.
I know.
Aelin.
She was already asleep. Rowan wasn't pissy. No, pissy didn't cover a fraction of it. The rage was still riding him the next morning, when he awoke before she did and slipped into her closet to examine the clothes she'd shucked off. Dust and metal and smoke and sweat tickled his nose. And there were streaks of dirt and ash on the black cloth. Only a few daggers lay scattered nearby. No sign of Goldrin or Damaris having been moved from where he'd dumped them on the closet floor last night. No whiff of Lorcan or the Volg. No scent of blood. Either she hadn't wanted to risk losing the ancient blades in a fight, or she hadn't wanted the extra weight. She was sprawled across the bed when he emerged, his jaw clenched. She hadn't even bothered to wear one of those ridiculous nightgowns. She must have been exhausted enough not to bother with anything other than that oversized shirt. His shirt, he noticed with no small amount of male satisfaction. It was enormous on her. It was so easy to forget how much smaller she was than him. How mortal, and how utterly unaware of the control he had to exercise every day, every hour, to keep her at arm's length, to keep from touching her. He glowered at her before striding out of the bedroom. In the mountains, he would have made her go on a run, or chop wood for hours, or pull extra kitchen duty. This apartment was too small. Too full of males used to getting their own way, and a queen used to getting hers. Worse, a queen hell-bent on keeping secrets. He'd dealt with young rulers before. Maeve had dispatched him to enough foreign courts that he knew how to get them to heal. But Aelin, she'd taken him out to hunt demons. And yet this task, whatever she had done, required even him to be kept in ignorance. Rowan filled the kettle, focusing on each movement, if only to keep from throwing it through the window. Making breakfast? How domestic of you. Aelin leaned against the doorway, irreverent as always.
Shouldn't you be sleeping like the dead, considering your busy night?
Can we not get into a fight about it before my first cup of tea? With lethal calm, he set the kettle on the stove.
After tea, then?
She crossed her arms, sunlight kissing the shoulder of her pale blue robe. Such a creature of luxury, his queen. And yet, she hadn't bought a single new thing for herself lately. She loosed a breath, and her shoulders slumped a bit. The rage roaring through his veins stumbled, and stumbled again when she chewed on her lip. I need you to come with me today.
Anywhere you need to go,
he said. She looked toward the table, at the stove.
To Aerobin?
He hadn't forgotten for one second where they would be going tonight, what she would be facing. She shook her head, then shrugged. No, I mean, yes, I want you to come tonight, but there's something else I need to do, and I want to do today, before everything happens. He waited, restraining himself from going to her, from asking her to tell him more. That had been their promise to each other. Space to sort out their own miserable lives, to sort out how to share them. He didn't mind, most of the time. She rubbed at her brows with her thumb and forefinger, and when she squared her shoulders, those silk-clad shoulders that bore a weight he'd do anything to relieve, she lifted her chin. There's a grave I need to visit. She didn't have a black gown fit for mourning, but Aelin figured Sam would have preferred to see her in something bright and lovely anyway. So she wore a tunic the color of spring grass, its sleeves capped with dusty golden velvet cuffs. Life, she thought, as she strode through the small, pretty graveyard overlooking the aviary. The clothes Sam would have wanted her to wear reminded her of life. The graveyard was empty, but the headstones and grass were well kept, and the towering oaks were budding with new leaves. A breeze coming in off the glimmering river set them sighing and ruffled her unbound hair, which was back now to its normal honey gold. Rowan had stayed near the little iron gate, leaning against one of those oaks to keep passers-by on the quiet city street behind them from noticing him. If they did, his black clothes and weapons painted him as a mere bodyguard. She had planned to come alone, but this morning she'd awoken and just needed him with her. The new grass cushioned each step between the pale headstones, bathed in the sunlight streaming down. She picked up pebbles along the way, discarding the misshapen and rough ones, keeping those that gleamed with bits of quartz or color. She clutched a fistful of them. By the time she approached the last line of graves at the edge of the large, muddy river flowing lazily past. It was a lovely grave, simple, clean, and on the stone was written, Sam Cortland, beloved. Aerobin had left it blank, unmarked, but Wesley had explained in his letter how he'd asked the tombstone carver to come. She approached the grave, reading it over and over. Beloved, not just by her, but by many. Sam, her Sam. For a moment, she stared at that stretch of grass, at the white stone. For a moment, she could see that beautiful face grinning at her, yelling at her,
loving her. She opened her fist of pebbles and picked out the three loveliest. Two for the years since he'd been taken from her. One for what they'd been together. Carefully, she placed them at the apex of the headstone's curve. Then she sat down against the stone, tucking her feet beneath her, and rested her head against the smooth, cool rock.
"Hello, Sam,"
she breathed onto the river breeze. She said nothing for a time, content to be near him, even in this form. The sun warmed her hair, a kiss of heat along her scalp, a trace of Mala, perhaps, even here. She began talking, quietly and succinctly, telling Sam about what had happened to her 10 years ago, telling him about these past 9 months. When she was done, she stared up at the oak leaves rustling overhead and dragged her fingers through the soft grass.
"I miss you," she said.
"Every day I miss you, and I wonder what you would have made of all this, made of me."
I think you would have been a wonderful king.
I think they would have liked you more than me, actually. Her throat tightened.
"I never told you how I felt,
but I loved you, and I think a part of me might always love you. Maybe you were my mate, and I never knew it. Maybe I'll spend the rest of my life wondering about that. Maybe I'll see you again in the afterworld, and then I'll know for sure. But until then, I'll miss you, and I'll wish you were here." She would not apologize, nor say it was her fault, because his death wasn't her fault. And tonight she would settle that debt. She wiped at her face with the back of her sleeve and got to her feet. The sun dried her tears. She smelled the pine and snow before she heard him. And when she turned, Rowan stood a few feet away, staring at the headstone behind her.
I know who he was to you,
Rowan said softly, and held out his hand. Not to take hers, but for a stone. She opened her fist, and he sorted through the pebbles until he found one, smooth and round, the size of a hummingbird's egg. With a gentleness that cracked her heart, he set it on the headstone beside her own pebbles.
"You're going to kill Aerobin tonight, aren't you?"
he said. "After the dinner, when he's gone to bed, I'm going back to the keep and ending it." She'd come here to remind herself why that grave before them existed, and why she had those scars on her back.
"And the amulet of Orinth?"
"An endgame, but also a distraction." The sunlight danced on the aviary, nearly blinding.
"You're ready to do it?"
She looked back at the gravestone, and at the grass concealing the coffin beneath.
"I have no choice but to be ready."
Chapter 40 Elide spent 2 days on voluntary kitchen duty, learning where and when the laundresses ate and who brought their food. By that point, the head cook trusted her enough that when she volunteered to bring the bread up to the dining hall, he didn't think twice. No one noticed when she sprinkled the poison onto a few rolls of bread. The wingleader had sworn it wouldn't kill, just make the laundress sick for a few days. And maybe it made her selfish for placing her own survival first. But Elide didn't hesitate as she dumped the pale powder onto some of the rolls, blending it into the flour that dusted them. Elide marked one roll in particular to make sure she gave it to the laundress she'd noted days before, but the others would be given out at random to the other laundresses.
Hell, she was likely going to burn in Hellas's realm forever for this.
But she could think about her damnation when she had escaped and was far, far away, beyond the southern continent. Elide limped into the raucous dining hall, a quiet cripple with yet another platter of food. She made her way down the long table, trying to keep the weight off her leg as she leaned in again and again to deposit rolls onto plates. The laundress didn't even bother to thank her. The next day, the keep was abuzz with the news that a third of the laundresses were sick. It must have been the chicken at dinner, they said, or the mutton, or the soup, since only some of them had had it. The cook apologized, and Elide had tried not to apologize to him when she saw the terror in his eyes. The head laundress actually looked relieved when Elide limped in and volunteered to help. She told her to pick any station and get to work.
perfect. But guilt pushed down on her shoulders as she went right to that woman's station. She worked all day and waited for the bloodied clothes to arrive. When they finally did, there was not as much blood as before, but more of a substance that looked like vomit. Aleet almost vomited herself as she washed them all and wrung them out and dried them and pressed them. It took hours. Night was falling when she folded the last of them, trying to keep her fingers from shaking. But she went up to the head laundress and said softly, no more than a nervous girl,
Should I bring them back?
The woman smirked. Aleet wondered if the other laundress had been sent down there as a punishment. There's a stairwell over that way that will take you to the subterranean levels. Tell the guards you're Misty's replacement. Bring the clothes to the second door on the left and drop them outside. The woman looked at Aleed's chains. Try to run out if you can. Aleed's bowels had turned to water by the time she reached the guards. But they didn't so much as question her as she recited what the head laundress had said. Down, down, down she walked, into the gloom of the spiral stairwell. The temperature plummeted the farther she descended. And then she heard the moaning. Moans of pain, of terror, of despair. She held the basket of clothes to her chest. A torch flickered ahead. Gods, it was so cold here. The stairs widened toward the bottom, flaring out into a straight descent and revealing a broad hallway, lit with torches and lined with countless iron doors. The moans were coming from behind them. Second door on the left. It was gouged with what looked like claw marks, pushing out from within. There were guards down here. Guards and strange men, patrolling up and down, opening and closing the doors. Aleed's knees wobbled. No one stopped her. She set the basket of laundry in front of the second door and rapped quietly. The iron was so cold that it burned.
Clean clothes,
she said against the metal. It was absurd. In this place, with these people, they still insisted on clean clothes. Three of the guards had paused to watch. She pretended not to notice, pretended to back away slowly, a scared little rabbit. Pretended to catch her mangled foot on something and slip. But it was real pain that roared through her leg as she went down, her chains snapping and tugging at her. The floor was as cold as the iron door. None of the guards made to help her up. She hissed, clutching her ankle, buying as much time as she could, her heart thundering, thundering, thundering. And then the door cracked open. Manon watched Aleed vomit, again, and again. A black-beak sentinel had found her curled in a ball in a corner of a random hallway, shaking, a puddle of piss beneath her. Having heard that the servant was now Manon's property, the sentinel had dragged her up here. Asterin and Sorrel stood stone-faced behind Manon, as the girl puked into the bucket again, only bile and spittle this time, and at last raised her head. Report, Manon said.
I saw the chamber,
Aleed rasped. They all went still.
Something opened the door to take the laundry. And I saw the chamber beyond.
With those keen eyes of hers, she'd likely seen too much.
Out with it, Manon said, leaning against the bedpost.
Asterin and Sorrel lingered by the door, monitoring for eavesdroppers. Aleed stayed on the floor, her leg twisted out to the side, but the eyes that met Manon sparked with a fiery temper that the girl rarely revealed.
The thing that opened the door was a beautiful man. A man with golden hair and a collar around his neck. But he was not a man. There was nothing human in his eyes.
One of the princes. It had to be.
I'd pretended to fall so I could buy myself more time to see who opened the door. When he saw me on the ground, he smiled at me. And this darkness leaked out of him.
She lurched toward the bucket and leaned over it, but didn't vomit. After another moment, she said,
I managed to look past him into the room behind.
She stared at Manon, then at Asterin and Sorrel.
You said they were to be implanted.
Yes,
Manon said. Did you know how many times?
What? Asterin breathed.
Did you know?
Elide said, her voice uneven with rage or fear.
How many times they were each to be implanted with offspring before they were let go?
Everything went quiet in Manon's head.
Go on.
Elide's face was white as death, making her freckles look like dried, splattered blood.
From what I saw, they've delivered at least one baby each, and are already about to give birth to another.
That's impossible,
Sorrel said.
The witchlings?
Asterin breathed. Elide really did vomit again this time. When she was done, Manon mastered herself enough to say, Tell me about the witchlings.
They are not witchlings. They are not babies,
Elide spat, covering her face with her hands as if to rip out her eyes.
They are creatures. They are demons. Their skin is like black diamond, and they have these snouts with teeth. Fangs. Already they have fangs, and not like yours.
She lowered her hands.
They have teeth of black stone. There is nothing of you in them.
If Sorrel and Asterin were horrified, they showed nothing.
What of the yellow legs?
Manon demanded.
They have them chained to tables, altars, and they were sobbing.
They were begging the man to let them go, but they're
so close to giving birth.
And then I ran. I ran from there as fast as I could, and,
oh gods, oh gods,
Elide began weeping. Slowly, slowly, Manon turned to her second and third. Sorrel was pale, her eyes raging. But Asterin met Manon's gaze, met it with a fury that Manon had never seen directed at her.
You let them do this.
Manon's nails flicked out.
These are my orders. This is our task.
It is an abomination, Asterin shouted.
Elide paused her weeping and backed away to the safety of the fireplace. Then there were tears, tears in Asterin's eyes. Manon snarled.
Has your heart softened?
The voice might as well have been her grandmother's.
Do you have no stomach for-
You let them do this!
Asterin bellowed. Sorrel got right into Asterin's face.
Stand down.
Asterin shoved Sorrel away so violently that Manon's second went crashing into the dresser. Before Sorrel could recover, Asterin was inches from Manon.
You gave him those witches.
You gave him witches!
Manon lashed out, her hand wrapping around Asterin's throat. But Asterin gripped her arm, digging in her iron nails so hard that blood ran. For a moment, Manon's blood dripping on the floor was the only sound. Asterin's life should have been forfeited for drawing blood from the air. Light glinted off Sorrel's dagger as she approached, ready to tear it into Asterin's spine if Manon gave the order. Manon could have sworn Sorrel's hand wobbled slightly. Manon met Asterin's gold-flecked black eyes.
You do not question. You do not demand. You are no longer third. Vesta will replace you. You-
A harsh, broken laugh.
You're not going to do anything about it, are you? You're not going to free them. You're not going to fight for them, for us. Because what would
grandmother say? Why hasn't she answered your letters, Manon? How many have you sent now? Asterin's iron nails dug in harder, shredding flesh. Manon embraced the pain. Tomorrow morning at breakfast you will receive your punishment, Manon hissed, and shoved her third away, sending Asterin staggering toward the door. Manon let her bloodied arm hang at her side. She'd need to bind it up soon. The blood, on her palm, on her fingers, felt so familiar.
If you try to free them, if you do anything stupid, Asterin Blackbeak,
Manon went on.
The next punishment you'll receive will be your own execution.
Asterin let out another joyless laugh.
You would not have disobeyed even if it had been Blackbeak's down there, would you?
Loyalty, obedience, brutality. That is what you are.
Leave while you can still walk,
Sorrel said softly. Asterin whirled toward the second, and something like hurt flashed across her face.
Manon blinked. Those feelings.
Asterin turned on her heel and left, slamming the door behind her. Elide had managed to clear her head by the time she offered to clean and bandage Manon's arm. What she'd seen today, both in this room and in that chamber below.
You let them do this!
She didn't blame Asterin for it. Even if it had shocked her to see the witch lose control so completely, she had never seen any of them react with anything but cool amusement, indifference, or raging bloodlust. Manon hadn't said a word since she'd ordered Sorrel away, to follow Asterin and keep her from doing something profoundly stupid. As if saving those yellow-legs witches might be foolish, as if that sort of mercy was reckless. Manon was staring at nothing as Elide finished applying the salve and reached for the bandages. The puncture wounds were deep, but not bad enough to warrant stitches.
Is your broken kingdom worth it?
Elide dared to ask. Those burnt gold eyes shifted toward the darkened window.
I do not expect a human to understand what it is like to be an immortal with no homeland, to be cursed with eternal exile.
Cold, distant words.
Elide said, My kingdom was conquered by the King of Otterlin, and everyone I loved was executed. My father's lands and my title were stolen from me by my uncle, and my best chance of safety now lies in sailing to the other end of the world. I understand what it is like to wish. To hope?
It is not hope. It is survival.
Elide gently rolled a bandage around the witch's forearm.
It is hope for your homeland that guides you, that makes you obey.
And what of your future? For all your talk of hope, you seem resigned to fleeing. Why not return to your kingdom to fight? Perhaps the horror she'd witnessed today gave her the courage to say,
10 years ago, my parents were murdered. My father was executed on a butchering block in front of thousands. But my mother died defending Aelin Galathinius, the heir to the throne of Terrasen. She bought Aelin time to run. They followed Aelin's tracks to the frozen river, where they said she must have fallen in and drowned. But you see, Aelin had fire magic. She could have survived the cold. And Aelin never really liked me or played with me because I was so shy, but I never believed them when they said she was dead. Every day since then, I've told myself that she got away, that she's still out there biding her time, growing up, growing strong, so that she might one day come to save Terrasen. And you are my enemy, because if she returns, she will fight you. But for 10 years, until I came here, I endured Vernon because of her. Because of the hope that she got away, and my mother's sacrifice wasn't in vain. I thought that one day Aelin would come to save me, would remember I existed, and rescue me from that tower.
There it was, her great secret, which she had never dared tell anyone, even her nursemaid.
Even though she never came, even though I'm here now, I can't let go of that, and I think that is why you obey. Because you have been hoping every day of your miserable, hideous life that you'll get to go home.
Elide finished wrapping the bandage and stepped back. Manon was staring at her now. If this Aelin Galathinius were indeed alive, would you try to run to her? Fight with her?
I would fight with tooth and claw to get to her. But there are lines I would not cross, because I don't think I could face her if I couldn't face myself for what I'd done.
Manon said nothing. Elide stepped away, heading to the bathing room to wash her hands. The wingleader said from behind her,
Do you believe monsters are born or made?
From what she'd seen today, she would say some creatures were very much born evil. But what Manon was asking,
I'm not the one who needs to answer that question,
Elide said. Chapter 41. The oil was sitting on the edge of the bathtub, gleaming like amber in the afternoon light. Naked, Aelin stood before it, unable to reach for the bottle. It was what Aerobin wanted, for her to think of him as she rubbed the oil into every inch of her skin, for her breasts, her thighs, her neck to smell like almond. His chosen scent. His scent, because he knew that a fey male had come to stay with her, and all signs pointed to their being close enough for scent to matter to Rowan. She closed her eyes, steeling herself.
Aelin?
Rowan said through the door.
I'm fine, she said. Only a few more hours, and then everything would change.
She opened her eyes and reached for the oil. It took Rowan a jerk of his chin to get Adian to follow him to the roof. Aelin was still in her room dressing, but Rowan wasn't going far. He would hear any enemies on the street long before they had any chance to get into the apartment. Despite the Vog prowling the city, Rifthold was one of the milder capitals he'd encountered, its people mostly prone to avoiding trouble. Perhaps from fear of being noticed by the monster who dwelled in that god-awful glass castle. But Rowan would keep his guard up all the same. Here, in Terrasen, or wherever else their paths might lead. Adian was now lounging in a small chair one of them had dragged up here at some point. Gavriel's son, a surprise and a shock every time he saw that face or caught a whiff of his scent. Rowan couldn't help but wonder if Aelin had sent the wordhounds hunting after Lorcan, not just to keep him from tracking her and to pave the way for her to free magic, but also to keep him from getting close enough to Adian to detect his lineage. Adian crossed his legs with a lazy grace that probably served to hide his speed and strength from opponents. She's going to kill him tonight, isn't she?
After the dinner, and whatever Aerobin plans to do with the Vog commander, she's going to circle back and put him down.
Only a fool would think Adian's grin sprang from amusement.
That's my girl. And if she decides to spare him?
It's her decision to make.
Smart answer.
What if she were to say we could take care of it?
Then I'd hope you'd join me for a hunt, Prince.
Another smart answer, and what he'd been waiting to hear.
Rowan said,
And when the time comes?
You took the blood oath, Adian said, and there wasn't any hint of a challenge in his eyes, only the truth, spoken warrior to warrior. I get Aerobin's killing blow.
Fair enough.
Primal wrath flickered in Adian's face. It's not going to be quick, and it's not going to be clean. That man has many, many debts to pay before he meets his end.
By the time Aelin emerged, the males were talking in the kitchen, already dressed. On the street outside the apartment, the Vog commander was bound, blindfolded, and locked in the trunk of the carriage Nezrin had acquired. Aelin squared her shoulders, shaking loose the breath that had become a tight knot in her chest, and crossed the room, each step bringing her too quickly toward their inevitable departure. Adian, facing her in a fine tunic of deep green, was the first to notice. He let out a low whistle.
Well, if you didn't already scare the living shit out of me, you've certainly done it now.
Rowan turned to her. He went completely and utterly still as he took in the dress. The black velvet hugged every curve and hollow before pooling at her feet, revealing each too shallow breath as Rowan's eyes grazed over her body. Down, then up, to the hair she'd swept back with golden batwing-shaped combs that rose above either side of her head like a primal headdress, to the face she'd kept mostly clean, save for a sweep of coal along her upper eyelid, and the deep red lips she'd painstakingly colored. With the burning weight of Rowan's attention upon her, she turned to show them the back, the roaring golden dragon clawing up her body. She looked over her shoulder in time to see Rowan's eyes again slide south and linger. Slowly, his gaze lifted to hers, and she could have sworn that hunger, ravenous hunger, flickered there.
Demons and dining, Adian said, clapping Rowan on the shoulder. We should go.
Her cousin passed her by with a wink. When she turned back to Rowan, still breathless, only cool observation remained on his face.
You said you wanted to see me in this dress, she said a bit hoarsely.
I hadn't realized the effect would be so.
He shook his head.
He took in her face, her hair, the combs.
You look like...
a queen?
The fire-breathing bitch queen those bastards claim you are.
She chuckled, waving a hand toward him. The form-fitting black jacket that showed off those powerful shoulders, the silver accents that matched his hair, the beauty and elegance of the clothes that made an enthralling contrast with the tattoo down the side of his face and neck.
You don't look too bad yourself, Prince.
An understatement. He looked. She couldn't stop staring. That's how he looked.
Apparently,
he said, walking toward her and offering an arm.
We both clean up well.
She gave him a sly grin as she took his elbow, the scent of almonds wrapping around her again.
Don't forget your cloak. You'd feel rather guilty when all those poor mortal women combust at the sight of you.
I'd say likewise. But I think you'd enjoy seeing men bursting into flames as you strutted by.
She winked at him, and his chuckle echoed through her bones and blood. Chapter 42. The front gates of the Assassin's Keep were open, the gravel drive and manicured lawn lit with shimmering glass lamps. The pale stone estate itself was bright, beautiful, and inviting. Aelin had told them what to expect on the carriage ride over, but even as they came to a stop at the foot of the steps, she looked at the two males crammed in with her and said, "Be on your guard, and keep your fat mouths shut, especially with the Volg commander. No matter what you hear or see, just keep your fat mouths shut. No psychotic territorial bullshit." Adian chuckled. "Remind me to tell you tomorrow how charming you are." But she wasn't in the mood to laugh. Nezrin jumped down from the driver's seat and opened the carriage door. Aelin stepped out, leaving her cloak behind, and didn't dare look to the house across the street, to the roof where Kaol and a few rebels were providing backup, in case things went very, very wrong. She was halfway up the marble steps when the carved oak doors swung open, flooding the threshold with golden light. It wasn't the butler standing there, smiling at her with two white teeth.
"Welcome home,"
Aerobin purred. He beckoned them into the cavernous entry hall.
"And welcome to your friends."
Adian and Nezrin moved around the carriage to the trunk in the back. Her cousin's nondescript sword was drawn as they opened the compartment and yanked out the chained, hooded figure.
"Your favor?"
Aelin said as they hauled him to his feet. The Volg commander thrashed and stumbled in their grip as they led him toward the house, the hood over his head swaying this way and that. A low, vicious hissing noise crept out from under the coarse-knit fibers.
"I would have preferred the servant's door for our guest,"
Aerobin said tightly. He was in green. Green for Terrasen, though most would assume it was to offset his auburn hair. A way to confuse their assumptions about his intentions, his allegiance. He wore no weapons she could see, and there was nothing but warmth in those silver eyes as he held out his hands to her. As if Adian wasn't now tugging a demon up the front steps. Behind them, Nezrin steered the carriage away. She could feel Rowan bristling, sense Adian's disgust, but she blocked them out. She took Aerobin's hands, dry, warm, calloused. He squeezed her fingers gently, peering into her face.
"You look ravishing.
But I'd expect nothing less. Not even a bruise after trapping our guest.
Impressive."
He leaned closer, sniffing.
"And you smell divine, too. I'm glad my gift was put to good use."
From the corner of her eye, she saw Rowan straighten, and she knew he'd slid into the killing calm. Neither Rowan nor Adian wore visible weapons save for the single blade her cousin now had out. But she knew they were both armed beneath their clothes, and knew Rowan would snap Aerobin's neck if he so much as blinked wrong at her. It was that thought alone that made her smile at Aerobin.
"You look well," she said. "I suppose you already know my companions."
He faced Adian, who was busy digging his sword into the commander's side, as a gentle reminder to keep moving.
"I haven't had the pleasure of meeting your cousin."
She knew Aerobin took in every detail as Adian came closer. pushing his charge before him, trying to find any weakness, anything to use to his advantage. Adian just continued into the house, the Volg commander stumbling across the threshold.
"You've recovered well, General," Aerobin said. "Or should I call you Your Highness, in honor of your Ash River lineage?"
"Whichever you prefer, of course."
She knew then that Aerobin had no plans to let the demon and Stavon leave this house alive. Adian gave Aerobin a lazy grin over his shoulder.
"I don't give a shit what you call me."
He shoved the Volg commander farther inside.
"Just take this rutting thing off my hands."
Aerobin smiled blandly. Unfazed, he'd calculated Adian's hatred. With deliberate slowness, he turned to Rowan.
"You, I don't know,"
Aerobin mused, having to lift his head to see Rowan's face. He made a show of looking Rowan over.
"It's been an age since I saw one of the Fae.
I don't remember them being quite so large."
Rowan moved deeper into the entry hall, every step laced with power and death, coming to a stop at her side.
"You can call me Rowan. That's all you need to know."
He cocked his head to the side, a predator assessing prey.
"Thank you for the oil," he added. "My skin was a little dry."
Aerobin blinked, as much surprise as he'd show. It took her a moment to process what Rowan had said, and to realize that the almond smell hadn't just been coming from her. He'd worn it too. Aerobin flicked his attention to Adian and the Volg commander.
"Third door on the left. Take him downstairs. Use the fourth cell."
Aelin didn't dare look at her cousin as he dragged Stavon along. There was no sign of the other assassins, not even a servant. Whatever Aerobin had planned, he didn't want any witnesses. Aerobin trailed after Adian, his hands in his pockets. But Aelin remained in the hall for a moment, looking at Rowan. His brows were high as she read the words in his eyes, his posture.
"He never specified that only you had to wear it."
Her throat tightened, and she shook her head.
"What?"
he seemed to ask.
"You just..."
she shook her head again.
"Surprise me sometimes."
"Good. I'd hate for you to get bored."
Despite herself, despite what was to come, a smile tugged on her lips, as Rowan took her hand and gripped it tightly. When she turned to head into the dungeons, her smile faded as she found Aerobin watching. Rowan was about a hair's breadth from ripping out the King of the Assassins' throat as he led them down, down, down into the dungeons. Rowan kept a step behind Aelin while they descended the long, curving stone staircase, the reek of mildew and blood and rust growing stronger with each step. He'd been tortured enough, and done enough torturing himself, to know what this place was. To know what sort of training Aelin had received down here.
A girl.
She'd been a girl when the red-haired bastard a few steps ahead had brought her here, and taught her how to cut up men, how to keep them alive while she did it, how to make them scream and plead, how to end them. There was no part of her that disgusted him, no part of her that scared him, but the thought of her in this place, with these smells, in this darkness. With every step down the stairs, Aelin's shoulders seemed to droop, her hair seeming to grow duller, her skin paler. This was where she'd last seen Sam, he realized, and her master knew it.
"We use this for most of our meetings, harder to eavesdrop or be caught unawares,"
Aerobin said to no one in particular.
"Though it also has other uses, as you'll soon see."
He opened door after door, and it seemed to Rowan that Aelin was counting them, waiting until...
"Shall we?"
Aerobin said, gesturing toward the cell door. Rowan touched her elbow. Gods, his self-control had to be in shreds tonight. He couldn't stop making excuses to touch her. But this touch was essential. Her eyes met his, dim and cold.
"You give the word. Just one damn word and he's dead. And then we can search this house from top to bottom for that amulet."
She shook her head as she entered the cell. And he understood it well enough. Not yet.
Not yet.
She'd almost balked on the stairs to the dungeons, and it was only the thought of the amulet, only the warmth of the Fey warrior at her back that made her put one foot in front of the other and descend into the dark stone interior. She would never forget this room. It still haunted her dreams. The table was empty, but she could see him there, broken and almost unrecognizable, the scent of Gloriella clinging to his body. Sam had been tortured in ways she hadn't even known until she read Wesley's letter. The worst of it had been requested by Aerobin. Requested as punishment for Sam's loving her. Punishment for tampering with Aerobin's belongings. Aerobin sauntered into the room, hands in his pockets. Rowan's sharp sniff told her enough about what this place smelled like. Such a dark, cold room where they'd put Sam's body. Such a dark, cold room where she'd vomited, and then lain beside him on that table for hours and hours, unwilling to leave him. Where Adian now chained Stavon to the wall. "Get out," Aerobin said simply to Rowan and Adian, who stiffened. "The two of you can wait upstairs. We don't need any unnecessary distractions, and neither does our guest." "Over my rotting corpse," Adian snapped. Aelin shot him a sharp look. "Lysandra is waiting for you in the drawing room," Aerobin said with expert politeness, his eyes now fixed on the hooded Volg chained to the wall. Stavon's gloved hands tugged at the chains, his incessant hissing rising with impressive violence. "She'll entertain you. We'll be up for dinner shortly." Rowan was watching Aelin very, very carefully. She gave him a slight nod. Rowan met Adian's gaze. The general stared right back. Honestly, had she been anywhere else, she might have pulled up a chair to watch this latest little dominance battle. Thankfully, Adian just turned toward the stairs. A moment later, they were gone. Aerobin stalked to the demon and snatched the hood from his head. Black, rage-filled eyes glared at them and blinked, scanning the room. "We can do this the easy way or the hard way," Aerobin drawled. Stavon just smiled. Aelin listened to Aerobin interrogate the demon, demanding to know what it was, where it had come from, what the king wanted. After 30 minutes and minimal slicing, the demon was talking about anything and everything. "How does the king control you?" Aerobin pushed. The demon laughed. "Wouldn't you like to know?" Aerobin half turned to her, holding up his dagger, a trickle of dark blood sliding down the blade. "Would you like to do the honors? This is for your benefit, after all." She frowned at her dress.
"I don't want to get blood on it."
Aerobin smirked and slashed his dagger down the man's pectoral. The demon screeched, drowning out the pitter-patter of blood on the stones.
"The ring,"
it panted after a moment.
"We've all got them."
Aerobin paused, and Aelin cocked her head.
Left hand," it said.
Aerobin yanked off the man's glove, revealing the black ring.
"How?"
"He has a ring, too. Uses it to control us all. Ring goes on, and it doesn't come off. We do what he says, whatever he says."
"Where did he get the rings from?"
"Made 'em. I don't know."
The dagger came closer.
"I swear. We wear the rings, and he makes a cut on our arms. Licks our blood so it's in him, and then he can control us however he wants. It's the blood that links us."
"And what does he plan to do with you all, now that you're invading my city?"
"We're searching for the general. I won't tell anyone he's here. Or that she's here, I swear. The rest, I don't know."
His eyes met hers. Dark, pleading. "Kill him," she said to Aerobin.
"He's a liability." "Please,"
Stavon said, his eyes still holding hers. She looked away.
"He does seem to have run out of things to tell me," Aerobin mused.
Swift as an adder, Aerobin lunged for him, and Stevan screamed so loudly it hurt her ears as Aerobin sliced off his finger and the ring that held it in one brutal movement.
Thank you,
Aerobin said above Stevan screaming, and then slashed his knife across the man's throat. Aelin stepped clear of the spray of blood, holding Stevan's stare as the light faded from his gaze. When the spray had slowed, she frowned at Aerobin. You could have killed him and then cut off the ring.
Where would the fun be in that?
Aerobin held up the bloody finger and pried off the ring.
Lost your bloodlust?
I'd dump that ring in the aviary if I were you.
The king is enslaving people to his will with these things.
I plan to study this one as best I can.
Of course he did.
He pocketed the ring and inclined his head toward the door.
Now that we're even, darling, shall we eat?
It was an effort to nod, with Stevan's still bleeding body sagging from the wall. Aelin was seated to Aerobin's right, as she'd always been. She'd expected Lysandra to be across from her. But instead, the courtesan was beside her, no doubt meant to reduce her options to two. Deal with her longtime rival or talk to Aerobin, or something like that. She had bid hello to Lysandra, who'd been keeping Adian and Rowan company in the drawing room, keenly aware of Aerobin on her heels as she shook Lysandra's hand, subtly passing over the note she'd kept hidden in her dress all night. The note was gone by the time Aelin leaned in to kiss the courtesan's cheek, the peck of someone not entirely thrilled to be doing so. Aerobin had seated Rowan to his left, with Adian beside the warrior. The two members of her court were separated by the table to keep them from reaching her, and to leave her unprotected from Aerobin. Neither had asked what happened in the dungeon.
I have to say,
Aerobin mused as their first course, tomato and basil soup, courtesy of vegetables grown in the hothouse in the back, was cleared away by silent servants who had been summoned now that Stevan had been dealt with. Aelin recognized some, though they didn't look at her. They had never looked at her, even when she was living here. She knew they wouldn't dare whisper a word about who dined at this table tonight. Not with Aerobin as their master.
You're a rather quiet group.
Or has my protege scared you into silence? Adian, who had watched every bite she took of that soup, lifted an eyebrow. You want us to make small talk after you just interrogated and butchered a demon? Aerobin waved a hand.
I'd like to hear more about you all.
Careful, she said too quietly to Aerobin. The King of the Assassins straightened the silverware flanking his plate.
Shouldn't I be concerned about who my protege is living with?
You weren't concerned about who I was living with when you had me shipped off to Endovir. A slow blink.
Is that what you think I did?
Lysandra stiffened beside her. Aerobin noted the movement, as he noted every movement, and said,
Lysandra can tell you the truth. I fought tooth and nail to free you from that prison. I lost half my men to the effort, all of them tortured and killed by the king. I'm surprised your friend the captain didn't tell you. Such a pity he's on rooftop watch tonight.
He missed nothing, it seemed. Aerobin looked to Lysandra, waiting. She swallowed and murmured.
He did try, you know, for months and months.
It was so convincing that Aelin might have believed it. Through some miracle, Aerobin had no idea that the woman had been meeting with them in secret. Some miracle, or Lysandra's own wits. Aelin drawled to Aerobin,
Do you plan on telling me why you insisted we stay for dinner?
How else would I get to see you? You would have just dumped that thing on my doorstep and left. And we learned so much that we could use, together.
The chill down her spine wasn't faked.
Though I have to say this new you is much more subdued. I suppose for Lysandra that's a good thing. She always looks at the hole you left in the entry wall when you threw that dagger at her head. I kept it there, as a little reminder of how much we all missed you.
Rowan was watching her, an asp ready to strike. But his brows bunched slightly, as if to say,
You really threw a dagger at her head?
Aerobin began talking about a time Aelin had brawled with Lysandra and they'd rolled down the stairs, scratching and yowling like cats. So Aelin looked at Rowan a moment longer. I was a tad hot-headed.
I'm beginning to admire Lysandra more and more. 17-year-old Aelin must have been a delight to deal with.
She fought the twitching in her lips. I would pay good money to see 17-year-old Aelin meet 17-year-old Rowan. His green eyes glittered. Aerobin was still talking.
17-year-old Rowan wouldn't have known what to do with you. He could barely speak to females outside his family.
Liar. I don't believe that for a second.
It's true. You would have scandalized him with your nightclothes. Even with that dress you have on.
She sucked on her teeth. He would probably have been even more scandalized. To learn I'm not wearing any undergarments beneath this dress.
The table rattled as Rowan's knee banged into it. Aerobin paused, but continued when Adian asked about what the demon had told him.
You can't be serious,
Rowan seemed to say.
Did you see any place where this dress might hide them? Every line and wrinkle would show.
Rowan shook his head subtly, his eyes dancing with a light that she'd only recently come to glimpse and cherish.
Do you delight in shocking me?
She couldn't stop her smile.
How else am I supposed to keep a cranky immortal entertained?
Her grin was distracting enough that it took her a moment to notice the silence, and that everyone was staring at them, waiting. She glanced at Aerobin, whose face was a mask of stone.
Did you ask me something?
There was only calculating ire in his silver eyes, which might have once made her start begging for mercy.
I asked, Aerobin said.
If you've had fun these past few weeks, wrecking my investment properties and ensuring that all my clients won't touch me.
Chapter 43. Aelin leaned back in her chair. Even Rowan was staring at her now, surprise and annoyance written on his face. Lysandra was doing a good job of feigning shock and confusion, even though it had been she who had fed Aelin the details, who had made her plan so much better and broader than it had been when Aelin scribbled it out on that ship.
I don't know what you're talking about, she said with a little smile.
Oh?
Aerobin swirled his wine. You mean to tell me that when you wrecked the vaults beyond repair, it wasn't a move against my investment in that property? And my monthly cut of their profits? Don't pretend it was just vengeance for Sam.
The king's men showed up. I had no choice but to fight for my life.
After she'd led them directly from the docks to the pleasure hall, of course.
And I suppose it was an accident that the lockbox was hacked open so its contents could be snatched up by the crowd.
It had worked. Worked so spectacularly that she was surprised Aerobin had lasted this long without going for her throat.
You know how those lowlifes get. A little chaos and they turn into animals foaming at the mouth.
Lysandra cringed. A stellar performance of a woman witnessing a betrayal.
Indeed,
Aerobin said. But especially the lowlifes at establishments from which I receive a handsome monthly sum, correct?
So you invited me and my friends here tonight to fling accusations at me? Here I was, thinking I'd become your personal Vol'g hunter.
You deliberately disguised yourself as Hinsel Cormac, one of my most loyal clients and investors, when you freed your cousin.
Aerobin snapped. Adian's eyes widened slightly.
I could dismiss it as coincidence, except a witness says he called out Cormac's name at the prince's party, and Cormac waved to him. The witness told the king that, too, that he saw Cormac heading toward Adian right before the explosions happened.
And what a coincidence,
that the very day Adian disappeared, two carriages belonging to a business that Cormac and I owned together went missing. Carriages Cormac then told all my clients and partners that I used to get Adian to safety when I freed the general that day by impersonating him, because I, apparently, have become a god's damned rebel sympathizer strutting about town at all hours of the day.
She dared a look at Rowan, whose face remained carefully blank, but saw the words there anyway.
You wicked, clever fox.
And here you were, thinking the red hair was just for vanity.
I shall never doubt again.
She turned to Aerobin. I can't help it if your prissy clients turn on you at the slightest hint of danger.
Cormac has fled the city,
and continues to drag my name through the mud. It's a miracle the king hasn't come to haul me to his castle. If you're worried about losing money, you could always sell the house, I suppose, or stop using Lysandra's services. Aerobin hissed, and Rowan and Adian reached casually under the table for their hidden weapons.
What will it take, dearest, for you to stop being such a raging pain in my ass?
There they were, the words she'd wanted to hear. The reason she'd been so careful not to wreck him altogether, but merely to annoy him just enough. She picked at her nails. A few things, I think. The sitting room was oversized, and made to entertain parties of 20 or 30, with couches and chairs and chaises spread throughout. Aelin lounged in an armchair before the fire, Aerobin across from her, fury still dancing in his eyes. She could feel Rowan and Adian in the hall outside, monitoring every word, every breath. She wondered whether Aerobin knew they'd disobeyed his command to remain in the dining room. She doubted it. They were stealthier than ghost leopards, those two. But she didn't want them in here, either. Not until she'd done what she needed to do. She crossed one leg over the other, revealing the simple black velvet shoes she wore, and her bare legs.
So all of this was punishment for a crime I didn't commit,
Aerobin said at last. She ran a finger down the rolled arm of the chair. First thing, Aerobin, let's not bother with lies.
I suppose you've told your friends the truth.
My court knows everything there is to know about me. And they know everything you've done, too.
Casting yourself as the victim, are you? You're forgetting that it didn't take much encouragement to put those knives in your hands.
I am what I am, but it doesn't erase the fact that you knew very well who I was when you found me. You took my family necklace off me, and told me that anyone who came looking for me would wind up killed by my enemies. She didn't dare let her breathing hitch, didn't let him consider the words too much as she plowed ahead. You wanted to shape me into your own weapon. Why?
Why not? I was young and angry, and my kingdom had just been conquered by that bastard king. I believed I could give you the tools you needed to survive, to someday defeat him. That is why you've come back, isn't it? I'm surprised you and the captain haven't killed him yet. Isn't that what he wants? Why he tried to work with me? Or are you claiming that kill for yourself?
You honestly expect me to believe that your end goal was to have me avenge my family and reclaim my throne?
Who would you have become without me? Some pampered, quaking princess? Your beloved cousin would have locked you up in a tower and thrown away the key. I gave you your freedom. I gave you the ability to bring down men like Adian Ashriver with a few blows. And all I get for it is contempt.
She clenched her fingers, feeling the weight of the pebbles she'd carried that morning to Sam's grave.
So what else do you have in store for me, O mighty queen? Shall I save you the trouble and tell you how else you might continue to be a thorn in my side?
You know the debt isn't anywhere near paid.
Debt? For what? For trying to free you from Endovir? And when that didn't work, I did the best I could. I bribed those guards and officials with money from my own coffers so that they wouldn't hurt you beyond repair. All the while, I tried to find ways to get you out, for a year straight.
Lies and truth, as he'd always taught her. Yes, he'd bribed the officials and guards to ensure she would still be functioning when he eventually freed her. But Wesley's letter had explained in detail just how little effort Aerobin had put forth, once it became clear she was headed for Endovir. How he'd adjusted his plans, embracing the idea of her spirit being broken by the mines.
And what about Sam?
She breathed.
Sam was murdered by a sadist, whom my useless bodyguard got it into his head to kill. You know I couldn't allow that to go unpunished. Not when we needed the new crime lord to continue working with us.
Truth and lies, lies and truth. She shook her head and looked toward the window, ever the confused and conflicted protege falling for Aerobin's poisoned words.
Tell me what I need to do to make you understand,
he said.
Do you know why I had you capture that demon? So that we could attain its knowledge. So you and I could take on the king, learn what he knows. Why do you think I let you in that room? Together. We'll bring that monster down together, before we're all wearing those rings. Your friend the captain can even join in free of charge.
You expect me to believe a word you say?
I have had a long, long while to think on the wretched things I've done to you, Selena.
Aelin, she snapped. My name is Aelin, and you can start proving you've mended your ways by giving me back my family's godsdamned amulet. Then you can prove it some more by giving me your resources, by letting me use your men to get what I need.
She could see the wheels turning in that cold and cunning head. In what capacity?
No word about the amulet.
No denying he had it.
You want to take down the king, she murmured, as if to keep the two fey males outside the door from hearing. Then let's take down the king. But we do it my way. The captain and my court stay out of it.
What's in it for me? These are dangerous times, you know. Why, just today, one of the top opiate dealers was caught by the king's men and killed. Such a pity. He escaped the slaughter at the Shadow Market only to be caught buying dinner a few blocks away.
More nonsense to distract her. She merely said, I won't send a tip to the king about this place, about how you operate and who your clients are, or mention the demon in your dungeon, its blood now a permanent stain. She smiled a little. I've tried. Their blood doesn't wash away.
Threats, Aelin? And what if I make threats of my own? What if I mention to the king's guard that his missing general and his captain of the guard are frequently visiting a certain warehouse? What if I let it slip that a fey warrior is wandering his city? Or worse, that his mortal enemy is living in the slums?
I suppose it'll be a race to the palace, then. It's too bad the captain has men stationed by the castle gates, messages in hand, ready for the signal to send them this very night.
You'd have to get out of here alive to give that signal.
The signal is us not returning, I'm afraid. All of us.
Again that cold stare. How cruel and ruthless you've become, my love. But will you become a tyrant as well? Perhaps you should start slipping rings onto the fingers of your followers.
He reached into his tunic. She kept her posture relaxed as a golden chain glinted around his long white fingers, and then a tinkling sounded. And then, the amulet was exactly as she remembered it. It had been with a child's hands that she'd last held it, and with a child's eyes that she'd last seen the cerulean blue front with the ivory stag, and the golden star between its antlers, the immortal stag of Mala Firebringer, brought over to these lands by Brannan himself, and set free in Oakwald Forest. The amulet glinted in Aerobin's hands as he removed it from his neck. The third and final word key. It had made her ancestors mighty queens and kings, had made Terrasen untouchable, a powerhouse so lethal no force had ever breached its borders, until she'd fallen into the Florine River that night, until this man had removed the amulet from around her neck, and a conquering army had swept through. And Aerobin had risen from being a local lord of assassins to crown himself this continent's unrivaled king of their guild. Perhaps his power and influence derived solely from the necklace. Her necklace, that he'd worn all these years.
I've become rather attached to it,
Aerobin said as he handed it over. He'd known she would ask for it tonight, if he was wearing it. Perhaps he'd planned to offer it to her all along, just to win her trust, or get her to stop framing his clients and interrupting his business. Keeping her face neutral was an effort as she reached for it. Her fingers grazed the golden chain, and she wished then and there that she'd never heard of it, never touched it, never been in the same room with it. Not right, her blood sang, her bones groaned. Not right, not right, not right. The amulet was heavier than it looked, and warm from his body, or from the boundless power dwelling inside of it.
The word key.
Holy gods. That quickly, that easily he'd handed it over. How Aerobin hadn't felt it, noticed it. Unless you needed magic in your veins to feel it. Unless it never called to him, as it did to her now. Its raw power brushing up against her senses like a cat rubbing along her legs. How had her mother, her father, any of them never felt it? She almost walked out right then and there, but she slid the amulet of Orinth around her neck, its weight becoming heavier still, a force pressing down on her bones, spreading through her blood like ink in water.
Not right.
Tomorrow morning, she said coldly, you and I are going to talk again. Bring your best men, or whoever is licking your boots these days. And then we are going to plan. She rose from the chair, her knees wobbling.
Any other requests, Your Majesty?
You think I don't realize you have the upper hand? She willed calm to her veins, her heart. You've agreed to help me far too easily, but I like this game. Let's keep playing it. His answering smile was serpentine. Each step toward the door was an effort of will, as she forced herself not to think about the thing thudding between her breasts.
If you betray us tonight, Aerobin, she added, pausing before the door, I'll make what was done to Sam seem like a mercy compared to what I do to you.
Learned some new tricks these past few years, have you?
She smirked, taking in the details of how he looked at this exact moment. The sheen of his red hair, his broad shoulders and narrow waist, the scars on his hands, and those silver eyes, so bright with challenge and triumph. They'd probably haunt her dreams until the day she died. One more thing, Aerobin said. It was an effort to lift a brow as he came close enough to kiss her, embrace her, but he just took her hand in his thumb caressing her palm.
I'm going to enjoy having you back, he purred.
Then, faster than she could react, he slid the wordstone ring onto her finger. Chapter 44 The hidden dagger Aelin had drawn clattered to the wooden floor the moment the cool black stone slid against her skin. She blinked at the ring, at the line of blood that had appeared on her hand beneath Aerobin's sharp thumbnail, as he raised her hand to his mouth and brushed his tongue along the back of her palm. Her blood was on his lips as he straightened. Such a silence in her head, even now. Her face stopped working. Her heart stopped working.
Blink,
he ordered her. She did.
Smile.
She did.
Tell me why you came back.
To kill the king. To kill the prince.
Aerobin leaned in close, his nose grazing her neck.
Tell me that you love me.
I love you.
My name. Say my name when you tell me that you love me.
I love you, Aerobin Hommel.
His breath warmed her skin as he huffed a laugh onto her neck, then brushed a kiss where it met her shoulder.
I think I'm going to like this.
He pulled back, admiring her blank face, her features, now empty and foreign.
Take my carriage. Go home and sleep. Do not tell anyone of this. Do not show your friends the ring. And tomorrow, report here after breakfast. We have plans, you and I, for our kingdom and Otterlin.
She just stared, waiting.
Do you understand?
Yes.
He lifted her hand again and kissed the wordstone ring.
Good night, Aelin,
he murmured, his hand grazing her backside as he shooed her out. Rowan was trembling with restrained rage as they took Aerobin's carriage home, none of them speaking. He'd heard every word uttered inside that room. So had Adian. He'd seen the final touch Aerobin had made, the proprietary gesture of a man convinced that he had a new, very shiny toy to play with. But Rowan didn't dare grab for Aelin's hand to see the ring.
She didn't move. She didn't speak. She just sat there and stared at the wall of the carriage. A perfect, broken, obedient doll.
I love you, Aerobin Hommel.
Every minute was an agony, but there were too many eyes on them. Too many. Even as they finally reached the warehouse and climbed out. They waited until Aerobin's carriage had driven off, before Rowan and Adian flanked the Queen as she slipped inside the warehouse and up the stairs. The curtains were already shut inside the house, a few candles left burning. The flames caught on the golden dragon embroidered on the back of that remarkable gown, and Rowan didn't dare breathe as she just stood in the center of the room, a slave awaiting orders.
Aelin?
Adian said, his voice hoarse. Aelin lifted her hands in front of her and turned. She pulled off the ring. So that was what he wanted. I honestly expected something grander. Aelin slapped the ring down on the small table behind the couch. Rowan frowned at it.
He didn't check Stevan's other hand.
No, she said, still trying to clear the horror of betrayal from her mind, trying to ignore the thing hanging from her neck. The abyss of power that beckoned. Adian snapped.
One of you needs to explain now.
Her cousin's face was drained of color, his eyes so wide that the whites shone all around them as he glanced from the ring to Aelin and back again. She'd held it together during the carriage ride, maintaining the mask of the puppet Aerobin believed she'd become. She crossed the room, keeping her arms at her sides to avoid chucking the word key against the wall. I'm sorry, she said. You couldn't know.
I could have running known. You really think I can't keep my mouth shut?
Rowan didn't even know until last night, she snapped.
Deep in that abyss, thunder rumbled.
Oh, gods. Oh, gods.
Is that supposed to make me feel better?
Rowan crossed his arms.
It is, considering the fight we had about it.
Adian shook his head.
Just explain.
Aelin picked up the ring. Focus. She could focus on this conversation until she could safely hide the amulet. Adian couldn't know what she carried, what weapon she'd claimed tonight. In Wendlin, there was a moment when Narok came back. When he warned me and thanked me for ending him. So I picked the Vogue commander who seemed to have the least amount of control over the human's body. Out of hope that the man might be in there, wishing for redemption in some form. Redemption for what the demon had made him do. Hoping to die knowing he'd done one good thing.
Why?
Speaking normally was an effort. So I could offer him the mercy of death and freedom from the Vogue. If he would only tell Aerobin all the wrong information. He tricked Aerobin into thinking that a bit of blood could control these rings. And that the ring he bore was the real thing. She held up the ring. I got the idea from you, actually. Lysandra has a very good jeweler, and had a fake made. The real thing I cut off the Vogue commander's finger. If Aerobin had taken off his other glove, he would have found him without a digit.
You'd need weeks to plan all that.
Aelin nodded.
But why?
Why bother with any of it? Why not just kill the prick?
Aelin set down the ring. I had to know.
Know what? That Aerobin is a monster?
That there was no redeeming him. I knew, but it was his final test. To show his hand. Adian hissed.
He would have made you into his own personal figurehead. He touched!
I know what he touched. And what he wanted to do. She could still feel that touch on her. It was nothing compared to the hideous weight pressing against her chest. She rubbed her thumb across the scabbed over slice on her hand. So now we know. Some small, pathetic part of her wished she didn't. Still in their finery, Aelin and Rowan stared at the amulet lying on the low table before the darkened fireplace in her bedroom. She'd taken it off the moment she entered the room, Adian having gone to the roof to take watch, and slumped onto the couch facing the table. Rowan took a seat beside her a heartbeat later. For a minute, they said nothing. The amulet gleamed in the light of the two candles Rowan had lit.
I was going to ask you to make sure it wasn't a fake. That Aerobin hadn't switched it, somehow.
Rowan said at last, his eyes fixed on the word key.
But I can feel it. A glimmer of whatever is inside that thing.
She braced her forearms on her knees, the black velvet of her dress softly caressing. In the past, people must have assumed that feeling came from the magic of whoever was wearing it, she said. With my mother? With Brannon? It would never have been noticed.
And your father and uncle? They had little to no magic, you said.
The ivory stag seemed to stare at her, the immortal star between its horns flickering like molten gold. But they had presence. What better place to hide this thing than around the neck of a swaggering royal? Rowan tensed as she reached for the amulet and flipped it over as quickly as she could. The metal was warm, its surface unmarred despite the millennia that had passed since its forging. There, exactly as she had remembered, were carved three word marks.
Any idea what those mean?
Rowan said, shifting close enough that his thigh grazed hers. He moved away an inch, though it did nothing to stop her from feeling the heat of him. I've never seen...
That one,
Rowan said, pointing to the first one.
I've seen that one. It burned on your brow that day.
Brannon's mark, she breathed. The mark of the bastard born. The nameless.
No one in Terrasen ever looked into these symbols?
If they did, it was never revealed. Or they wrote it in their personal accounts, which were stored in the Library of Orinth. She chewed on the inside of her lip. It was one of the first places the King of Otterland sacked.
Maybe the librarians smuggled out the ruler's accounts first. Maybe they got lucky.
Her heart sank a bit. Maybe. We won't know until we return to Terrasen. She tapped her foot on the carpet. I need to hide this. There was a loose floorboard in her closet under which she stashed money, weapons, and jewelry. It would be good enough for now. And Adian wouldn't question it, since she couldn't risk wearing the damn thing in public anyway, even under her clothes. Not until she was back in Terrasen. She stared down at the amulet.
So do it,
he said. I don't want to touch it.
If it was that easy to trigger, your ancestors would have figured out what it was.
You pick it up, she said, frowning. He just gave her a look. She bent down, willing her mind blank while she lifted the amulet off the table. Rowan stiffened as if bracing himself, despite his reassurance. The key was a millstone in her hand, but that initial sense of wrongness, of an abyss of power, it was quiet, slumbering. She made quick work of pulling back the rug in her closet and yanking loose the floorboard. She felt Rowan come up behind her, peering over her shoulder where she knelt and into the small compartment. She had picked up the amulet to drop it into the little space when a thread tugged inside her. No, not a thread, but a wind, as if some force barreled from Rowan into her, as if their bond were a living thing, and she could feel what it was to be him. She dropped the amulet into the compartment. It thudded only once, a dead weight.
What?
Rowan asked. She twisted to peer up at him. I felt you.
How?
So she told him, about his essence sliding into her, a feeling like she wore his skin, if only for a heartbeat. He didn't look entirely pleased.
That sort of ability could be a helpful tool for later.
She scowled. Typical warrior brute thinking. He shrugged. Gods, how did he handle it? The weight of his power. He could crush bones into dust even without his magic. He could bring this whole building down with a few well-placed blows. She'd known. Of course she'd known. But to feel it, the most powerful purebred fey male in existence. To an ordinary human, he was as alien as the Vog. But I think you're right. It can't just blindly act on my will, she said at last. Or else my ancestors would have raised Orinth to the ground any time they were royally pissed off. I think these things might be neutral by nature. It's the bearer who guides how they are used. In the hands of someone pure of heart, it would only be beneficial. That was how Terrasen thrived. Rowan snorted as she replaced the wooden plank,
tamping it down with the heel of her hand.
Trust me, your ancestors weren't utterly holy.
He offered her a hand up, and she tried not to stare at it as she gripped it. Hard, calloused, unbreakable, nearly impossible to kill. But there was a gentleness to his grip, a care reserved only for those he cherished and protected.
I don't think any of them were assassins, she said as he dropped her hand. The keys can corrupt an already black heart, or amplify a pure one. I've never heard anything about hearts that are somewhere in between.
The fact that you worry says enough about your intentions.
She stepped all around the area to ensure that no creaking boards gave away the hiding place. Thunder rumbled above the city.
I'm going to pretend that's not an omen, she muttered.
Good luck with that.
He nudged her with an elbow as they re-entered the bedroom.
We'll keep an eye on things.
And if you appear to be heading toward Dark Lorddom, I promise to bring you back to the light.
Funny.
The little clock on her nightstand chimed, and thunder boomed again through Rifthold. A swift-moving storm.
Good. Maybe it would clear her head, too.
She went to the box Lysandra had brought her and pulled out the other item.
Lysandra's jeweler, Rowan said, is a very talented person.
Aelin held up a replica of the amulet. She'd gotten the size, coloring, and weight almost perfect. She set it on her vanity like a discarded piece of jewelry,
just in case anyone asks where it went.
The downpour had softened to a steady drizzle by the time the clock struck one, yet Aelin hadn't come down from the roof. She'd gone up there to take over Adian's watch, apparently, and Rowan had waited, biding his time as the clock neared midnight, and then passed it. Kaol had come by to give Adian a report on the movements of Aerobin's men, but slipped back out around 12. Rowan was done waiting. She was standing in the rain, facing westward, not toward the glowing castle to her right, not toward the sea at her back, but across the city. He didn't mind that she'd gotten that glimpse into him. He wanted to tell her that he didn't care what she knew about him, so long as it didn't scare her away. And would have told her before if he still hadn't been so stupidly distracted by how she looked tonight. The lamplight glinted off the combs in her hair, and along the golden dragon on the dress.
You'll ruin that dress standing out here in the rain, he said.
She half turned toward him. The rain had left streaks of coal down her face, and her skin was as pale as a fish's belly. The look in her eyes, guilt, anger, agony, hit him like a blow to the gut. She turned again toward the city.
I was never going to wear this dress again anyway.
You know I'll take care of it tonight, he said, stepping beside her, if you don't want to be the one to do it.
And after what that bastard had tried to do to her, what he'd planned to do to her, he and Adian would take a long, long time ending Aerobin's life. She gazed across the city, toward the Assassin's Keep.
I told Lysandra she could do it.
Why?
She wrapped her arms around herself, hugging tight.
Because more than me, more than you or Adian, Lysandra deserves to be the one who ends him.
It was true.
Will she be needing our assistance?
She shook her head, spraying droplets of rain off the combs and the damp strands of hair that had come loose.
Kaol went to ensure everything goes fine.
Rowan allowed himself a moment to look at her, at the relaxed shoulders and uplifted chin, the grip she had on her elbows, the curve of her nose against the streetlight, the thin line of her mouth.
It feels wrong, she said, to still wish that there had been some other way.
She took an uneven breath, the air clouding in front of her.
He was a bad man, she whispered. He was going to enslave me to his will, use me to take over Terrasen, maybe make himself king, maybe sire my—
She shuddered so violently that light shimmered off the gold in her dress.
But he also— I also owe him my life. All this time I thought it would be a relief, a joy to end him. But all I feel is hollow and tired.
She was like ice when he slid an arm around her, folding her into his side. Just this once he would let himself hold her, If he'd been asked to put down Maeve, and one of his cadre had done it instead, if Lorkin had done it, he would have felt the same. She twisted slightly to peer up at him, and though she tried to hide it, he could see the fear in her gaze, and the guilt.
I need you to hunt down Lorkin tomorrow, see if he's accomplished the little task I gave him.
If he'd killed those wordhounds, or been killed by them, so she could at last free magic.
Gods, Lorkin was his enemy now.
He shut out the thought.
And if it's necessary to eliminate him?
He watched her throat bob as she swallowed.
It's your call then, Rowan. Do as you see fit.
He wished she'd told him one way or another, but giving him the choice, respecting their history enough to allow him to make that decision.
Thank you.
She rested her head against his chest, the tips of the batwing combs digging into him enough that he eased them one at a time from her hair. The gold was slick and cold in his hands, and as he admired the craftsmanship, she murmured,
I want you to sell those and burn this dress.
As you wish,
he said, pocketing the combs.
Such a pity, though. Your enemies would have fallen to their knees if they ever saw you in it.
He'd almost fallen to his knees when he'd first seen her earlier tonight. She huffed a laugh that might have been a sob, and wrapped her arms around his waist, as if trying to steal his warmth. Her sodden hair tumbled down. The scent of her, jasmine and lemon verbena and crackling embers, rising above the smell of almonds to caress his nose, his senses. Rowan stood with his queen in the rain, breathing in her scent, and let her steal his warmth for as long as she needed. The rain lightened to a soft sprinkle, and Aelin stirred from where Rowan held her, from where she'd been standing, soaking up his strength, thinking. She twisted slightly to take in the strong lines of his face, his cheekbones gilded with the rain and the light from the street. Across the city, in a room she knew too well, Aerobin was hopefully bleeding out, hopefully dead. A hollow thought, but also the clicking of a lock finally opened. Rowan turned his head to look at her, rain dripping off his silver hair, his features softened a bit, the harsh lines becoming more inviting. Vulnerable, even.
Tell me what you're thinking,
he murmured.
I'm thinking that the next time I want to unsettle you, all I need to do is tell you how rarely I wear undergarments.
His pupils flared.
Is there a reason you do that, princess?
Is there any reason not to?
He flattened his hand against her waist, his fingers contracting once as if debating letting her go.
I pity the foreign ambassadors who will have to deal with you.
She grinned, breathless and more than a little reckless. Seeing that dungeon room tonight, she'd realized she was tired. Tired of death, and of waiting, and of saying goodbye. She lifted a hand to cup Rowan's face.
So smooth, his skin,
the bones beneath strong and elegant. She waited for him to pull back, but he just stared at her, stared into her in that way he always did. Friends, but more, so much more. And she'd known it longer than she wanted to admit. Carefully, she stroked her thumb across his cheekbone, his face slick with the rain. It hit her like a stone, the wanting. She was a fool to have dodged it, denied it, even when a part of her had screamed it every morning that she'd blindly reached for the empty half of the bed. She lifted her other hand to his face, and his eyes locked onto hers, his breathing ragged as she traced the lines of the tattoo along his temple. His hands tightened slightly on her waist, his thumbs grazing the bottom of her ribcage. It was an effort not to arch into his touch.
Rowan,
she breathed, his name a plea and a prayer. She slid her fingers down the side of his tattooed cheek, and, faster than she could see, he grabbed one wrist and then the other, yanking them away from his face and snarling softly. The world yawned open around her, cold and still. He dropped her hands as if they were on fire, stepping away. Those green eyes flat and dull in a way she hadn't seen for some time now. Her throat closed up even before he said,
Don't do that. Don't
touch me like that.
There was a roaring in her ears, a burning in her face, and she swallowed hard.
I'm sorry.
Oh, gods. He was over 300 years old, immortal, and she...
I didn't mean...
She backed away a step, toward the door on the other side of the roof.
I'm sorry,
she repeated. It was nothing.
Good,
he said, going for the roof door himself.
Fine.
Rowan didn't say anything else as he stalked downstairs. Alone, she scrubbed at her wet face, at the oily smear of cosmetics.
Don't touch me like that.
A clear line in the sand. A line, because he was 300 years old, an immortal, and had lost his flawless mate. And she was young and inexperienced, and his Kerenom and queen, and he wanted nothing more than that. If she hadn't been so foolish, so stupidly unaware, maybe she would have realized that. Understood that though she'd seen his eyes shine with hunger for her, it didn't mean he wanted to act on it. Didn't mean he might not hate himself for it. Oh, gods. What had she done? The rain sliding down the windows cast slithering shadows on the wooden floor, on the painted walls of Aerobin's bedroom. Lysandra had been watching it for some time now, listening to the steady rhythm of the storm and to the breathing of the man sleeping beside her, utterly unconscious. If she were to do it, it would have to be now, when his sleep was deepest, when the rain covered up most sounds. A blessing from Temis, goddess of wild things, who had once watched over her as a shapeshifter, and who never forgot the caged beasts of the world. 3 words. That was all that had been written on the note Aelin slipped her earlier that night, a note still tucked into the hidden pocket of her discarded underwear. He's all yours. A gift, she knew. A gift from the queen who had nothing else to give a no-name whore with a sad story. Lysandra turned onto her side, staring now at the naked man sleeping inches away, at the red silk of his hair spilled across his face. He'd never once suspected who had fed Aelin the details about Cormac, but that had always been her ruse with Aerobin, the skin she'd worn since childhood. He had never thought otherwise of her vapid and vain behavior. Never bothered to. If he had, he wouldn't keep a knife under his pillow and let her sleep in this bed with him. He hadn't been gentle tonight, and she knew she would have a bruise on her forearm from where he'd gripped her too tightly. Victorious, smug, a king certain of his crown, he hadn't even noticed. At dinner, she'd seen the expression flash across his face when he caught Aelin and Rowan smiling at each other. All of Aerobin's jabs and stories had failed to find their mark tonight, because Aelin had been too lost in Rowan to hear. She wondered whether the queen knew. Rowan did. Adian did. And Aerobin did. He had understood that with Rowan, she was no longer afraid of him. With Rowan, Aerobin was now utterly unnecessary. Irrelevant. He's all yours. After Aelin had left, as soon as he'd stopped strutting about the house, convinced of his absolute mastery over the queen, Aerobin had called in his men. Lysandra hadn't heard the plans, but she knew the Fey Prince would be his first target. Rowan would die. Rowan had to die. She'd seen it in Aerobin's eyes as he watched the queen and her prince holding hands, grinning at each other despite the horrors around them. Lysandra slid her hand beneath the pillow as she sidled up to Aerobin, nestling against him. He didn't stir. His breathing remained deep and steady. He'd never had trouble sleeping. The night he'd killed Wesley, he slept like the dead, unaware of the moments when even her iron will couldn't keep the silent tears from falling. She would find that love again, one day, and it would be deep and unrelenting and unexpected. The beginning and the end and eternity. The kind that could change history, change the world. The hilt of the stiletto was cool in her hand, and as Lysandra rolled back over, no more than a restless sleeper, she pulled it with her. Lightning gleamed on the blade, a flicker of quicksilver. For Wesley,
For Sam. For Aelin. And for herself. For the child she'd been. For the 17-year-old on her bidding night. For the woman she'd become. Her heart in shreds, her invisible wound still bleeding. It was so very easy to sit up and slice the knife across Aerobin's throat. Chapter 45. The man strapped to the table was screaming as the demon ran its hands down his bare chest, its nails digging in and leaving blood in their wake.
"Listen to him," the demon prince hissed. "Listen to the music he makes."
Beyond the table, the man who usually sat on the glass throne said,
"Where are the rebels hiding?"
"I don't know, I don't know,"
the man shrieked. The demon ran a second nail down the man's chest. There was blood everywhere.
"Do not cringe, spineless beast. Watch. Savor."
The body that might once have been his, had betrayed him entirely. The demon gripped him tightly, forcing him to watch as his own hands gripped a cruel-looking device, fitting it onto the man's face, and began tightening.
"Answer me, rebel,"
the crowned man said. The man screamed as the mask tightened. He might have begun screaming too, might have begun begging the demon to stop.
"Coward, human coward, do you not taste his pain, his fear?"
He could, and the demon shoved every bit of delight it felt into him. Had he been able to vomit, he would have. Here there was no such thing. Here there was no escape.
"Please,"
the man on the table begged.
"Please."
But his hands did not stop, and the man went on screaming. Chapter 46. Today, Aelin decided, was already forfeited to hell, and there was no use even trying to salvage it, not with what she had to do next. Armed to the teeth, she tried not to think about Rowan's words from the night before as they took the carriage across the city, but she heard them beneath every clop of the horse's hooves, just as she'd heard them all night long while she lay awake in bed, trying to ignore his presence.
"Don't touch me like that."
She sat as far from Rowan as she could get without hanging out the carriage window. She'd spoken to him, of course, distantly and quietly, and he'd given her clipped answers, which made the ride truly delightful. Adian, wisely, didn't ask about it. She needed to be clear-headed, relentless, in order to endure the next few hours. Aerobin was dead. Word had come an hour ago that Aerobin had been found murdered. Her presence was requested immediately by Tern, Harding, and Mullen, the three assassins who had seized control of the guild and estate until everything was sorted out. She'd known last night, of course. Hearing it confirmed was a relief. That Lysandra had done it, and survived it, but dead. The carriage pulled up in front of the assassin's keep, but Aelin didn't move. Silence fell as they looked up at the pale stone manor looming above, but Aelin closed her eyes, breathing in deep.
"One last time. You have to wear this mask one last time, and then you can bury Selena Sardothian forever."
She opened her eyes, her shoulders squaring and her chin lifting, even as the rest of her went fluid with feline grace. Adian gaped, and she knew there was nothing of the cousin he'd come to know in her face. She glanced at him, then Rowan, a cruel smile spreading as she leaned over to open the carriage door. "Don't get in my way," she told them. She swept from the carriage, her cloak flapping in the spring wind as she stormed up the steps of the keep, and kicked open the front doors. Chapter 47.
"What the rutting hell happened?" Aelin roared, as the doors to the assassin's keep banged behind her. Adian and Rowan followed on her heels, both concealed beneath heavy hoods. The front hall was empty,
but a glass crashed from the closed sitting room. And then, 3 males, one tall, one short and slender, and one monstrously muscled, stalked into the hall. Harding, Tern, and Mullen. She bared her teeth at the men. Tern in particular. He was the smallest, oldest, and the most cunning, the ringleader of their little group. He'd probably hoped that she'd kill Aerobin that night they ran into each other in the vaults.
Start talking, now, she hissed.
Tern braced his feet apart.
Not unless you do the same.
Adian let out a growl as the three assassins looked over her companions.
Never mind the guard dogs, she snapped, drawing their attention back to her.
Explain yourselves.
There was a muffled sob from the sitting room behind the men, and she flicked her eyes over Mullen's towering shoulder.
Why are those two pieces of whoring trash in this house?
Tern glowered.
Because Lysandra was the one who woke up screaming next to his body.
Her fingers curled into claws.
Was she now?
She murmured, such wrath in her eyes that even Tern stepped aside, as she stalked into the sitting room. Lysandra was slumped in an armchair, a handkerchief pressed to her face. Clarice, her madam, stood behind the chair, her face pale and tight. Blood stained Lysandra's skin and matted her hair, and patches had soaked through the thin silk robe that did little to hide her nakedness. Lysandra jerked upright, her eyes red and face splotchy.
I didn't. I swear I didn't.
A spectacular performance.
Why the hell should I believe you? Aelin drawled. You're the only one with access to his room.
Clarice, golden-haired and aging gracefully for a woman in her 40s, clicked her tongue.
Lysandra would never harm Aerobin. Why would she, when he was doing so much to pay off her debts?
Aelin cocked her head at the madam.
Did I ask for your goddamned opinion, Clarice?
Poised for violence, Rowan and Adian kept silent, though she could have sworn a hint of shock flashed in their shadowed eyes.
Good.
Aelin flicked her attention to the assassins.
Show me where you found him. Now.
Tern gave her a long look, considering her every word.
A valiant effort, she thought, to try to catch me in knowing more than I should.
The assassin pointed to the sweeping stairs visible through the open sitting room doors.
In his room. We moved his body downstairs.
You moved it before I could study the scene myself? It was tall, quiet Harding who said,
You were told only as a courtesy.
And to see if I'd done it.
She stalked from the sitting room, pointing a finger behind her at Lysandra and Clarice. If either of them tries to run, she said to Adian, gut them. Adian's grin shone from beneath his hood, his hands hovering within casual reach of his fighting knives. Aerobin's bedroom was a bloodbath, and there was nothing feigned as she paused on the threshold, blinking at the blood-drenched bed and the blood pooled on the floor.
What the hell had Lysandra done to him?
She clenched her hands against their trembling, aware that the three assassins at her back could see it. They were monitoring her every breath and blink and swallow.
How?
Mullen grunted.
Someone sliced his throat open and let him choke to death on his own blood.
Her stomach turned. Honestly turned. Lysandra, it seemed, hadn't been content to let him go quickly.
There,
she said. And her throat closed.
She tried again.
There's a footprint in the blood.
Boots,
Tern said at her side.
Big, probably male.
He gave Aelin's slender feet a pointed look. Then he studied Rowan's feet where the prints loomed behind her, even though he'd probably already examined them. The little shit. Of course, the footprints Kaol had deliberately left were made with boots different from what any of them wore. The lock shows no sign of tampering, she said, touching the door. Does the window?
Go check,
Tern said. She would have to walk through Aerobin's blood to reach it.
Just tell me,
she said quietly, warily.
Lock's broken from the outside,
Harding said, and Tern shot him a glare. She stepped back into the cool darkness of the hall. Rowan silently kept his distance, his Fey heritage still undetected beneath that hood. And it would remain that way so long as he didn't open his mouth to reveal his elongated canines. Aelin said, "No one reported signs of anything being amiss?" Tern shrugged. There was a storm. The murderer probably waited until then to kill him. He gave her another long look, wicked violence dancing in his dark eyes.
"Why don't you just say it, Tern? Why don't you ask me where I was last night?"
"We know where you were,"
Harding said, coming to tower over Tern. There was nothing kind on his long, bland face.
"Our eyes saw you at home all night. You were on the roof of your house, and then you went to bed."
Exactly as she'd planned. "Are you telling me that detail because you'd like me to hunt down your little eyes and blind them?" Aelin replied sweetly. "Because after I sort out this mess, that's exactly what I plan to do." Marlin sighed sharply through his nose and glared at Harding, but said nothing. He was always a man of few words, perfect for dirty work.
"You don't touch our men, and we won't touch yours," Tern said.
"I don't make bargains with piece-of-shit second-rate assassins," she chirped, and gave him a nasty smile as she swept down the hall, past her old room, and down the stairs, Rowan a step behind. She gave Adian a nod as she entered the sitting room. He kept up his watchful position, still smiling like a wolf. Lysandra hadn't moved an inch. "You can go," she said to her. Lysandra's head snapped up.
"What?" Tern barked.
Aelin pointed to the door. "Why would these two money-grubbing whores kill their biggest client? If anything," she said over her shoulder, "I'd think you three would have more to gain." Before they could start barking, Clarice coughed pointedly.
"Yes," Aelin hissed.
Clarice's face was deathly pale, but she held her head high as she said,
"If you would allow it. The master of the bank will be here soon to read Aerobin's will."
"Aerobin,"
she dabbed at her eyes, the perfect portrait of grief.
"Aerobin informed me that we were named. We would like to remain until it has been read."
Aelin grinned. "Aerobin's blood hasn't yet dried on that bed, and you're already swooping in for your bequest."
"I don't know why I'm surprised. Maybe I've dismissed you as his murderer too soon, if you're that eager to snatch whatever he's left you."
Clarice paled again, and Lysandra began shaking.
"Please, Selena,"
Lysandra begged.
"We didn't. I would never..."
Someone knocked on the front door. Aelin slid her hands into her pockets.
"Well, well. What good timing."
The master of the bank looked as if he might vomit at the sight of blood-covered Lysandra, but then he sighed with something like relief when he spied Aelin. Lysandra and Clarice now sat in twin armchairs, while the master took a seat behind the little writing desk before the towering bay windows, Tern and his cronies hovering like vultures. Aelin leaned against the wall beside the doorway, arms crossed, Adian flanking her left side and Rowan her right. As the master went on and on with his condolences and apologies, she felt Rowan's eyes on her. He took a step nearer, as if to brush his arm against hers. She sidled out of reach. Rowan was still staring at her when the master opened a sealed envelope and cleared his throat. He spouted some legal jargon and offered his condolences again, which God's damned Clarice had the audacity to accept as though she were Aerobin's widow. Then came the long list of Aerobin's assets, his business investments, his properties, and the enormous, outrageous fortune left in his account. Clarice was practically drooling on the carpet, but Aerobin's three assassins kept their faces carefully neutral.
"It is my will," the master read, "that the sole beneficiary of all my fortune, assets, and holdings should be my heir, Selena Sardothian."
Clarice whipped around in her chair, fast as an adder.
"What?"
"Bullshit," Adian blurted. Aelin just stared at the master, her mouth a bit open, her hands falling slack to her sides.
"Say that again,"
she breathed. The master gave a nervous, watery smile.
"Everything, all of it,
is left to you.
Well, except for this sum to Madame Clarisse to settle his debts.
He showed Clarisse the paper.
That's impossible,
the madam hissed. He promised I was in that will. And you are, Aelin drawled, pushing off the wall to peer over Clarisse's shoulder at the small number.
Don't get greedy now.
Where are the duplicates? Turn demanded. Have you inspected them? He stormed around the table to examine the will. The master flinched, but held up the parchment, signed by Aerobin and utterly legal.
We verified the copies in our vaults this morning. All identical. All dated from 3 months ago.
When she'd been in Wendlin.
She stepped forward. So, aside from that teensy sum for Clarisse, all of this, the house, the guild, the other properties, his fortune, it's all mine? The master nodded again, already scrambling to pack up his case.
Congratulations, Miss Sardothian.
Slowly, she turned her head toward Clarisse and Lysandra.
Well, if that's the case,
she bared her teeth in a vicious smile.
Get your whoring, blood-sucking carcasses the hell off my property.
The master choked. Lysandra couldn't move fast enough as she rushed for the door. Clarisse, however, remained seated.
How dare you?
The madam began.
Five,
Aelin said, holding up five fingers. She lowered one and reached for her dagger with her other hand.
Four,
another.
Three.
Clarisse hauled ass from the room, bustling after a sobbing Lysandra. Then Aelin looked at the three assassins. Their hands hung limp at their sides, fury and shock and, wisely enough, something like fear on their faces. She said too quietly,
You held Sam back while Aerobin beat me into oblivion, and then didn't raise a finger to stop it when Aerobin beat him too. I don't know what role you played in his death, but I will never forget the sounds of your voices outside my bedroom door, as you fed me the details about Rourke Farron's house. Was it easy for you three to send me to that sadist's house, knowing what he'd done to Sam and what he was aching to do to me? Were you just following orders, or were you more than happy to volunteer?
The master had recoiled in his chair, trying to make himself as invisible as possible in a room full of professional killers. Tern's lip curled.
We don't know what you're talking about.
Pity. I might have been willing to listen to some paltry excuses. She looked at the clock on the mantel. Pack your clothes and get the hell out.
Right now. They blinked.
What? Tern said. Pack your clothes, she said, enunciating each word. Get the hell out.
Right now. This is our home,
Harding said.
Not anymore, she picked at her nails. Correct me if I'm wrong, master,
she purred, and the man cringed at the attention.
I own this house and everything in it.
Tern, Harding, and Mullen haven't yet paid back their debts to poor Aerobin, so I own everything they have here, even their clothes. I'm feeling generous, so I'll let them keep those, since their taste is shit-awful anyway. But their weapons, their client lists, the guild, all of that is mine. I get to decide who's in and who's out. And since these three saw fit to accuse me of murdering my master, I say they're out. If they try to work again in this city, on this continent, then by law and by the laws of the guild, I have the right to hunt them down and chop them into itty-bitty pieces. She batted her eyelashes.
Or am I wrong?
The master's gulp was audible.
You are correct.
Tern took a step toward her.
You can't. You can't do this.
I can.
And I will.
Queen of the Assassins sounds so nice, doesn't it?
She waved to the door. See yourselves out. Harding and Mullen made to move, but Tern flung his arms out, stopping them.
What the hell do you want from us?
Honestly? I wouldn't mind seeing you three gutted and hanging from the chandeliers by your insides, but I think it would ruin these very beautiful carpets that I'm now the owner of.
You can't just toss us out. What will we do? Where will we go?
I hear hell is particularly nice at this time of year.
Please, please,
Tern said, his breath coming fast. She stuffed her hands into her pockets and surveyed the room.
I suppose,
she made a thoughtful sound, I suppose I could sell you the house, and the land, and the guild.
You bitch,
Tern spat, but Harding stepped forward.
How much?
He asked. How much were the property and the guild valued at, Master? The master looked like a man walking up to the gallows as he opened his file again and found the sum. Astronomical, outrageous, impossible for the three of them to pay. Harding ran a hand through his hair. Tern had turned a spectacular shade of purple.
I take it you don't have that much,
Aelin said.
Too bad. I was going to offer to sell it all to you at face value. No markup.
She made to turn away. But Harding said,
Wait, what if we all paid together, the three of us and the others, so we all owned the house and the guild?
She paused. Money's money. I don't give a shit where you get it from, so long as it's given to me. She angled her head toward the master. Can you have the papers drawn up today, providing they come through with the money, of course?
This is insane,
Tern murmured to Harding. Harding shook his head.
Be quiet, Tern. Just be quiet.
The master said.
I can have them made up and ready within 3 hours. Will that be adequate time for you to provide proof of sufficient funds?
Harding nodded.
We'll find the others and tell them.
She smiled at the master and at the three men. Congratulations on your new freedom. She pointed to the door again. And as I am mistress of this house for another 3 hours, get out. Go find your friends, get your money together, and then sit on the curb like the trash you are until the master returns. They wisely obeyed, Harding clamping down on Tern's hand to keep him from giving her a vulgar gesture. When the master of the bank left, the assassins spoke to their colleagues, and every inhabitant of the house filed outside one by one, even the servants. She didn't care what the neighbors made of it. Soon, the giant, beautiful manor house was empty, save for her, Adian, and Rowan. They silently followed, as she walked through the door to the lower levels and descended into the dark, to see her master one last time. Rowan didn't know what to make of it. A whirlwind of hate and rage and violence. That was what she'd become. And none of these piss-poor assassins had been surprised. Not even a blink at her behavior. From Adian's pale face, he knew the general was thinking the same thing, contemplating the years she'd spent as that unyielding and vicious creature. Selena Sardothian, that was who she'd been then, and who she'd become today. He hated it. Hated that he couldn't reach her when she was that person. Hated that he'd snapped at her last night, had panicked at the touch of her hands. Now she'd shut him out entirely. This person she'd become today had no kindness, no joy. He followed her down into the dungeons, where candles lit a path toward the room where her master's body was being kept. She was still swaggering, hands in her pockets, not caring that Rowan lived or breathed or even existed.
Not real,
he told himself.
An act.
But she'd avoided him since last night, and today she had actually stepped away from his touch when he dared to reach for her. That had been real. She strode through the open door into the same room where Sam had lain. Red hair spilled out from underneath the white silk sheet covering the naked body on the table. And she paused before it. Then she turned to Rowan and Adian. She stared at them, waiting for them to. Adian swore. You switched the will, didn't you? She gave a small, cold smile. Her eyes shadowed.
You said you needed money for an army, Adian. So here's your money. All of it. And every coin for Terrison. It was the least Aerobin owed us.
That night I fought at the pits. We were only there because I'd contacted the owners days before and told them to send out subtle feelers to Aerobin about investing. He took the bait. Didn't even question the timing of it. But I wanted to make sure he quickly earned back all the money he lost when I trashed the vaults.
So we wouldn't be denied one coin owed to us.
holy burning hell. Adian shook his head.
How the hell did you even do it?
She opened her mouth, but Rowan said quietly,
she snuck into the bank. All those times that she slipped out in the middle of the night, and used all those daytime meetings with the master of the bank to get a better sense of the layout, where things were kept.
This woman, this queen of his, a familiar thrill raced through his blood.
You burned the originals?
She didn't even look at him. Clarice would have been a very rich woman, and Turn would have become king of the assassins. And you know what I would have received? The amulet of Orinth. That was all he left me.
That was how you knew he truly had it, and where he kept it,
Rowan said,
from reading the will.
She shrugged again, dismissing the shock and admiration he couldn't keep from his face. Dismissing him. Adian scrubbed at his face.
I don't even know what to say. You should have told me so I didn't act like a gawking fool up there.
Your surprise needed to be genuine. Even Lysandra didn't know about the will. Such a distant answer. Closed and heavy. Rowan wanted to shake her, demand she talk to him, look at him. But he wasn't entirely sure what he would do if she wouldn't let him near. If she pulled away again while Adian was watching.
Aelin turned back to Aerobin's body and flipped the sheet away from his face, revealing a jagged wound that sliced across his pale neck.
Lysandra had mangled him.
Aerobin's face had been arranged in an expression of calm. But from the blood Rowan had seen in the bedroom, the man had been very much awake while he choked on his own blood. Aelin peered down at her former master, her face blank save for a slight tightening around her mouth.
I hope the Dark God finds a special place for you in his realm, she said,
and a shiver went down Rowan's spine at the midnight caress in her tone. She extended a hand behind her to Adian.
Give me your sword.
Adian drew the sword of Orinth and handed it to her. Aelin gazed down at the blade of her ancestors as she weighed it in her hands. When she raised her head, there was only icy determination in those remarkable eyes. A queen exacting justice. Then she lifted her father's sword and severed Aerobin's head from his body. It rolled to the side with a vulgar thud, and she smiled grimly at the corpse.
Just to be sure, was all she said.
Part 2. Queen of Light. Chapter 48. Manon beat Astarin in the breakfast hall the morning after her outburst regarding the Yellowlegs coven. No one asked why. No one dared. 3 unblocked blows. Astarin didn't so much as flinch. When Manon was finished, the witch just stared her down, blue blood gushing from her broken nose. No smile, no wild grin. Then Astarin walked away. The rest of the 13 monitored them warily. Vesta, now Manon's third, looked half inclined to sprint after Astarin, but a shake of Sorrel's head kept the red-haired witch still. Manon was off kilter all day afterward. She'd told Sorrel to stay quiet about the Yellowlegs, but wondered if she should tell Astarin to do the same. She hesitated, thinking about it.
You let them do this.
The words danced around and around in Manon's head, along with that preachy little speech Aelin had made the night before.
Hope. What drivel.
The words were still dancing when Manon stalked into the Duke's council chamber 20 minutes later than his summons demanded.
Do you delight in offending me with your tardiness, or are you incapable of telling time?
The Duke said from his seat. Vernon and Caltaine were at the table, the former smirking, the latter staring blankly ahead. No sign of Shadowfire. I'm an immortal, Manon said, taking a seat across from them as Sorrel stood guard by the doors. Vesta in the hall outside. Time means nothing to me.
A little sass from you today, Vernon said. I like it.
Manon leveled a cold look at him. I missed breakfast this morning, human. I'd be careful if I were you. The Lord only smiled.
She leaned back in her chair. Why did you summon me this time?
I need another coven.
Manon kept her face blank. What of the yellow legs you already have?
They are recovering well, and will be ready for visitors soon.
Liar.
A Blackbeak coven this time,
the Duke pressed. Why?
Because I want one, and you'll provide one, and that's all you need to know.
You let them do this.
She could feel Sorrel's gaze on the back of her head. We're not whores for your men to use.
You are sacred vessels, the Duke said. It is an honor to be chosen.
I find that a very male thing to assume. A flash of yellowing teeth.
Pick your strongest coven and send them downstairs.
That will require some consideration.
Do it fast, or I will pick them myself.
You let them do this.
And in the meantime, the Duke said as he rose from his seat in a swift, powerful movement,
prepare your 13. I have a mission for you.
Manon sailed on a hard, fast wind, pushing Abraxos even as clouds gathered, even as a storm broke around the 13.
Out. She had to get out.
Had to remember the bite of the wind on her face, what unchecked speed and unlimited strength were like. Even if the rush of it was somewhat diminished by the rider she held in front of her frail body bundled up against the elements. Lightning cleaved the air so close by that Manon could taste the tang of the ether, and Abraxos veered, plunging into rain and cloud and wind. Caltaine didn't so much as flinch. Shouts burst from the men riding with the rest of the 13. Thunder cracked, and the world went numb with the sound. Even Abraxos's roar was muted in her dulled ears. The perfect cover for their ambush.
You let them do this.
The rain soaking through her gloves turned to warm, sticky blood. Abraxos caught an updraft and ascended so fast that Manon's stomach dropped. She held Caltaine tightly, even though the woman was harnessed in. Not one reaction from her. Duke Parrington, riding with Sorrel, was a cloud of darkness in Manon's peripheral vision, as they soared through the canyons of the White Fangs, which they had so carefully mapped all these weeks. The wild tribes would have no idea what was upon them until it was too late. She knew there was no way to outrun this, no way to avoid it. Manon kept flying through the heart of the storm. When they reached the village, blended into the snow and rock, Sorrel swooped in close enough for Caltaine to hear Parrington.
The houses. Burn them all.
Manon glanced at the Duke, then at her charge. Should we land?
From here,
the Duke ordered, and his face became grotesquely soft as he spoke to Caltaine.
Do it now, pet.
Below, a small female figure slipped out of one of the heavy tents. She looked up, shouting. Dark flames, shadow fire, engulfed her from head to toe. Her scream was carried to Manon on the wind. Then there were others, pouring out as the unholy fire leaped upon their houses, their horses.
All of them, Caltaine, the Duke said over the wind. Keep circling, wing leader.
Sorrel met Manon's stare. Manon quickly looked away, and reeled Abraxos back around the pass where the tribe had been camped. There were rebels among them. Manon knew because she'd tracked them herself. Shadow fire ripped through the camp. People dropped to the ground, shrieking, pleading in tongues Manon didn't understand. Some fainted from the pain. Some died from it. The horses were bucking and screaming, such wretched sounds that even Manon's spine stiffened. Then it vanished. Caltaine sagged in Manon's arms, panting, gasping down raspy breaths.
She's done, Manon said to the Duke.
Irritation flickered on his granite-hewn face. He observed the people running about, trying to help those who were weeping or unconscious, or dead. Horses fled in every direction.
Land, wing leader, and put an end to it.
Any other day, a good bloodletting would have been enjoyable, but at his order. She'd scouted this tribe for him.
You let them do this.
Manon barked the command to Abraxos, but his descent was slow, as if giving her time to reconsider. Caltaine was shuddering in Manon's arms, nearly convulsing. What's wrong with you? Manon said to the woman, half wondering if she should stage an accident that would end with the woman's neck snapped on the rocks. Caltaine said nothing, but the lines of her body were locked tight, as if frozen despite the fur she'd been wrapped in. Too many eyes. There were too many eyes on them for Manon to kill her. And if she was so valuable to the Duke, Manon had no doubt he'd take one, or all, of the 13 as retribution. Hurry, Abraxos, she said, and he picked up his pace with a snarl. She ignored the disobedience, the disapproval in the sound. They landed on a flattened bit of mountain ledge, and Manon left Caltaine in Abraxos's care, as she stomped through the sleet and snow toward the panicking village. The 13 silently fell into rank behind her. She didn't glance at them. Part of her didn't dare to see what might be on their faces. The villagers halted as they beheld the coven standing atop the rock outcropping jutting over the hollow where they'd made their home. Manon drew Windcleaver, and then the screaming started anew. Chapter 49. By mid-afternoon, Aelin had signed all the documents the master of the bank brought over, abandoned the keep to its horrible new owners, and Adian still hadn't wrapped his mind around everything that she had done. Their carriage deposited them at the edge of the slums, and they kept to the shadows as they made their way home, silent and unseen. Yet when they reached the warehouse, Aelin kept walking toward the river several blocks away without so much as a word. Rowan took a step to follow, but Adian cut him off. He must have had a death wish, because Adian even raised his brows a bit at the Fey Prince, before he sauntered down the street after her. He'd heard their little fight on the roof last night thanks to his open bedroom window. Even now, he honestly couldn't